when I was growing up as a wrestling fan, Survivor Series was one of the big four. Survivor Series is actually the second longest WWE pay-per-view, PLE, whatever you want to call it, that the company has ever had. It goes all the way back to 1987. And for many years, it was the elimination format, and then eventually, yeah, that got a little old, so they got away from it many years ago. And I was always wondering, how come we don't have War Games on the main roster, right? Because it was like a Vince McMahon thing where he didn't want to do it, he didn't create it. That's how we kind of got the Elimination Chamber. Triple H brought it back to NXT many years ago. It was enjoyable. And so now we have War Games on the main roster. And I'm thinking, great. Finally, right? Two rings, one cage. It's about time we have War Games. It fits in with the Survivor Series theme. And we've had War Games now for a few years. Now, I noticed something, you know, as they were putting the teams together for the men's War Games match this year, and I saw what they were doing, and they're building almost like an all-star roster, right? We have a lot of big names in the men's War Games match. But I noticed on the babyface side, we have Jimmy and Jey Uso. And I noticed we have Roman Reigns. And I noticed we have CM Punk. I said to myself, boy, that sounds awfully familiar. Well, yeah, it should be, because that's the exact same team that we had last year in War Games. The only difference between then and now is that instead of Sami Zayn, we had Cody Rhodes. And the only reason we had Cody Rhodes is because Seth Rollins got hurt, Drew McIntyre ended up in the match, so we had Cody Rhodes in the match. But my point is, there's a sameness to it. There's a sameness to the same faces and the same teams and the same people. And really, I'm talking about the bloodline. Most of all, there's a sameness to it. But there's another aspect to it as well, which is that I am a believer that when you do a match like War Games, there should be a really good reason for it. And one of the things that really helped kill Hell in a Cell for so many years is the fact that they decided to turn it into a pay-per-view. Even when there wasn't a need for a Hell in a Cell match, it's like, oh, it's October or whatever month it would be. Oh, we have to have Hell in a Cell. It's like, no, you don't. There should be a time and a place and a reason and a rivalry for it. CM Punk and Drew McIntyre last year was the perfect blow-off inside Hell in a Cell, right? It was bloody. It was brutal. It was great. But we have now fallen into this trap with War Games where, oh, it's Survivor Series, and so we have to do War Games, even if you don't really have a great reason to be doing War Games. And that was one of the things that plagued both the men's and the women's matches this year. It never really felt, especially on the women's side, more so. But it never really felt like there was a real reason for these men to go to war, for these women to go to war, right, and have a War Games match. And WWE also tends to play it very safe when it comes to matches like this where, you know, it's all about certain spots, right? And there's a sameness to that as well, right? Look at Io Sky in the women's match, right, doing the same spot from the top of the cage every year. It almost feels like we're just pushing the rewind button and playing over again what we saw the previous year. But I said, let's see what happens here. And then I saw that we only had four matches listed for this show. Now, this is not the first time the WWE has had a four-match PLE card. It hasn't happened very many times before, but it has happened in the past. And I think back to 1997, there was an In Your House pay-per-view, if I remember, that had four matches. That is still to this day one of the best WWE shows that this company has ever produced. That was the Canadian Stampede. So it can be done. It is not impossible. But four matches, that's not a lot of matches. There's certainly an extra match or two they could have put on the card to add a little more action to it. They chose to go with four. What that means is that the matches that you then have on this card, they have to really live up to expectations and really knock your socks off. And on top of that, they had what they claimed was 46,000 people inside Petco Park. Okay, big stadium show, almost 50,000 people inside this stadium to watch four matches. Question is, did those matches deliver? Did those matches pack the punch that you would expect a big stadium show in front of 46,000 people to have? The answer is no. No, it did not. They were put in an awful position, these men and women, to have to go out there and hit a grand slam when it just realistically wasn't even going to be possible. But this is what happens when you have a company that rests on its laurels, when you have a company that is hot, that is still selling tickets like gangbusters, and you see the ticket prices, even the ticket prices for this show, at the prices they were charging, 46,000 tickets, that's a lot of money that WWE made tonight. Right? They're still making money hand over fist, even though you see a softening in certain areas and maybe some buildings aren't selling out the way they would have at the beginning of the year. They're still doing monster business. But this is what happens when you have a company that is doing really, really well and they choose to play it safe and they really don't, you know, they don't, when they're putting these stories and these matches together and you look at all the different possibilities and all the things that they could potentially do, more often than not, they don't. They go the safe route and they're content to do that because they really don't have to do any more than that. When this show was over, my sense of Survivor Series 2025 was, man, that show was underwhelming. Man, that is one of, if not the lamest stadium shows, certainly, that I have ever seen. And there have been some awful WrestleMania night ones and night twos, but like if you put them together as like a complete WrestleMania, right? Technically, it's one show, if you're being honest. We don't have any two-night Survivor Series yet. And I hope to God that we don't. I really do. I'm sure we'll get a two-night Royal Rumble. We'll get a two-night, you know, Money in the Bank. A two-night Survivor Series is not something that we ever need to see. But this really solidified it as far as like when you think of the supposed Big Four, right? I know it's kind of an antiquated concept. Survivor Series has not been that for a very long time. It really has been replaced years ago, really, by Money in the Bank. Survivor Series does not pack the punch that it used to. And it kills me because it used to be one of the more fun shows of the year. Now, I don't know if the answer is simply to get rid of the War Games match. I don't think getting rid of the War Games matches is the answer here. But I do think that this show, when it was over, it felt to me like, okay, we need to give this concept a break for a while. That's what we need to do. Is the answer going back to the old elimination format? Is the answer to simply have a regular Survivor Series and just skip War Games and then come back to it the following year? Is the idea that maybe we adopt the Iron Survivor concept from NXT, which has worked really well down there? I mean, it's got the word Survivor in it. You can try it out and use it at Survivor Series 1 year. You got the penalty box outside. I don't know. I don't know. But one thing that was clear to me when this show was over is that this concept, it needs to go away for a little bit. Because at least this company, they can't seem to, you know, produce War Games matches that really provide, I think, the fun and the variety that the concept could bring. It's just a lot of the same old shit, same old spots, the same faces. And that's not what War Games should be. The women's War Games match that we had tonight was probably the safest War Games match that you will ever see. And great, hopefully nobody got hurt. That's great. But it's fucking War Games. There was nothing war gamey about that match at all. The men's match was better than the women's match tonight, action-wise, right? There was more to like, I think, about the men's War Games match than the women's War Games match. But even when that match was over, right, it just felt like a lot of the same old shit. And then they cap it off with this mystery man clad in all black climbing into the cage and laying out CM Punk with a super kick and a curb stomp. And boy, they really wanted you to think that it was Seth Rollins underneath that mask, which tells you that it's not Seth Rollins. As much as they wanted you to believe that it was, Seth Rollins is hurt. Seth Rollins did have surgery. No, it is not a work. He's not going to suddenly show up. That wouldn't even make any sense. Like, all the people out there think, oh my God, maybe it is Seth Rollins. Like, again, let's back up here for a second. Seth Rollins was the World Heavyweight Champion, and what exactly would the end game be by faking an injury and surrendering the World Heavyweight Championship? Boy, would that be fucking stupid. So no, it's not Seth Rollins. I am nearly certain that whoever it was under the mask tonight may not even be the person that ends up being revealed as the mystery man at the end of the day. It's like the Black Scorpion angle in WCW many years ago. It could technically be anybody under the mask. And when they're good and ready to reveal who it is, it could be somebody else. I am certain that it was Austin Theory. Austin Theory was the name that was rumored by Dave Meltzer many weeks ago as being in the men's War Games match. And what I think happened is that when Seth Rollins got legitimately injured, it blew up all of their plans. And Austin Theory got fucked out of a spot in the men's War Games match. It threw everything into a state of flux. That's how we got Drew McIntyre in War Games. That's how we got Cody Rhodes in War Games, and Logan Paul in War Games. None of those men would have been in that match tonight had Seth Rollins not gotten hurt. But because he did, they had to reshuffle things around a little bit. And so instead, I think he got the spot at the end, factoring into the finish. I think Austin Theory will end up being revealed as the newest addition to the Vision, and they'll pick up with whatever their original plans were. And if that's the case, good for Austin Theory, because boy, has this company not done jack shit with him over the last few years. Beat John Cena at WrestleMania, and you see what they did with him after that. You talk about wasting a John Cena spot. WWE hasn't just been dropping the ball with John Cena at various points during his retirement tour. It dates back to WrestleMania 39. You get a win over John Cena at WrestleMania, that ought to mean something. We shouldn't be sitting here in 2025, going on 26, talking about a match that happened in 23, and they did nothing with the man coming out of that match. That's a whole other story. I do believe it was Austin Theory as the attacker at the end of the show. I really don't think we need to overthink this. If anything, maybe it was somebody from NXT who's going to end up in that spot, and they could reveal somebody who's being called up and joining the Vision of Ricky Saints or someone like that. Certainly it's possible. But I'm going to assume that it was Austin Theory in that spot. It wasn't Randy Orton. First of all, he's not that big, okay? The person that we saw tonight, not nearly as big as Randy Orton was. And Randy Orton ain't moving in and out of the cage the way this person was. So I don't really think we have to overthink it. It made for a lame finish, though, to what I thought was an otherwise fine War Games match. Fine really being the best way I could describe it. I mean, you know, what am I supposed to say? You know, what did we really get out of this War Games match that we weren't expecting or that we haven't seen a million times before? Even coming out of the match, a lot of the rumors going around were that it's going to set up a direction for WrestleMania, potentially. It could have WrestleMania implications. So let's talk about what we saw here. We saw Bron Breakker pinning CM Punk, which is great, because that's another reason why I don't think the elimination format is even going to work in this company anymore, because they're too afraid to beat people. They're too afraid to beat their top stars. They did it tonight with CM Punk, but boy, can you imagine if these men were in an elimination style match tonight? You really think that they're going to pin Cody Rhodes? You think they're going to pin Roman Reigns? You think they're going to pin Brock Lesnar? You know how many fucking countouts and disqualifications we would see if that was a traditional Survivor Series elimination match? I mean, they could get away with the fucking MFTs on SmackDown. They don't give a shit. They beat the MFTs or Sami Zayn. But probably when it comes to bigger names like this, that old format isn't going to work for that reason alone. They're too afraid. We can't beat our top names, right? Maybe one, but we can't go beyond that, which is another thing I disagree with. They play it too safe. But we didn't really get a huge vision, no pun intended, of where things are going for WrestleMania, because I would have to assume that Bron Breakker and CM Punk, that's a match that you can go to a hell of a lot sooner than WrestleMania. Bron Breakker just got a win over the World Heavyweight Champion. That should be your next championship match. That should be the Royal Rumble match. And if they do it, Bron Breakker should become the World Heavyweight Champion. Bron Breakker should have already been the World Heavyweight Champion after the Rollins injury. But now if they go to that match, you can do that match in the next couple of months, and you can belt Bron Breakker in that match. I don't see that as a WrestleMania match. That's too far away. So what other WrestleMania directions did we really get a hint at coming out of this match? We saw Roman Reigns and CM Punk face-to-face, and they seemed to be okay with each other. And then we had Roman Reigns and Cody Rhodes face-to-face with each other. They were not so cool. So what are we teasing here? Are we teasing Roman Reigns and Cody Rhodes Part 3 at WrestleMania next year? Who's asking for this? I'm sure there are some people, but do you mean to tell me there's a groundswell of people who want to see another WrestleMania match with Roman Reigns and Cody Rhodes? That can't be the direction that we're looking at for WrestleMania next year. I understand that they're not sure if Seth Rollins is going to be back in time for Mania. Otherwise, they'd probably go with Rollins and Reigns. But I sure hope that Roman Cody 3 is not where we're headed in Las Vegas next year. Because again, it goes to the point I made at the very beginning, where it just seems like the faces and the matches never seem to change in this company. They just run it back and run it back and run it back. So outside of that, I didn't really get a huge sense of this War Games match giving a whole lot away as far as WrestleMania is. I think I even heard Paul Heyman talking about that in the lead up to this show tonight. That wasn't really the sense I got coming out of this main event. So those are the two War Games matches. We had one to start and one to finish. Neither one of them I thought was any great shakes, although the men's was better than the women's. But then you look at what's in the middle. It's like, okay, we had two other matches on this show. We had a women's world championship match that was as forgettable as they come. Nobody cared about this match. The only thing they cared about is whenever there was a tease that somebody was going to do the devil's kiss. I don't know what that says about the fans. I don't know what that says about the people in the match and how over they are. So you can take that match, put that on the side. That leaves you with John Cena. Tonight was John Cena's final PLE match. He's had a lot of matches at Survivor Series over the years. Not a whole lot of memorable ones, to be perfectly honest with you. This was not one of his stronger events. And I thought maybe coming into this show, this could very well end up being one of John Cena's best Survivor Series matches. They may go balls out here in this match. He really hasn't had that timeless, like, Survivor Series classic. You know, it's like, okay, well, if I'm going out, I'm going out with a bang, right? I'm going out with one of the hot young stars here in this company who we see as maybe being one of the leaders of the future, right? One of those top three or top five talents that might carry this company into the future. Big stadium show. So that's what I was hoping for. That's what I was looking for here in this match. We already had them on TV a few weeks ago. It was as basic a match as you could possibly ask for. And that's really all it had to be. But now here's the rematch, right? What are they going to do? What we ended up with was a severely overbooked match with interference from every single member of the Judgment Day. We had a ref bump. We had a belt shot. We had a nut shot. I felt like I was back watching John Cena's heel run. Now, for the live crowd, it was a fun spectacle. I'm not saying it was awful or it was terrible. But for John Cena's final PLE match? Really? This is the best we could come up with? Dominic Mysterio just, you know, being the typical chicken shit heel that he always is. I mean, I was hoping for and expecting something a little bit more here in the rematch. You only got four matches on the whole show, right? You could do a little bit more than what you did in Boston a few weeks ago. Cena's final, final bow here at Survivor Series. No, I mean, they kept it very basic. It was overbooked, interference up the ass, and we had a big return in the match. We had the return of Liv Morgan, which when I was going through all the Survivor Series predictions last week, I said I thought Liv Morgan was going to return here, and Liv Morgan was going to help Dom win the championship back. That was good, because no way John Cena should be going into Saturday night's main event as the Intercontinental Champion. The one thing they had to accomplish in this match, they accomplished, which was to get that belt off of John Cena. And Dom got his win back. All right, one of the biggest wins of his career. Maybe the biggest, honestly. I mean, he's wrestled his father in the past and all that, but he just beat John Cena at Survivor Series to win a championship in his hometown in front of 46,000 people. So for Dom, I mean, it really doesn't get any bigger than that. So good for him. And it's great to have Liv Morgan back. For John Cena's final PLE match, when it was over, I felt the same way. Kind of underwhelming. Now we have one match left. Don't even get me started on this Last Time Is Now tournament. I'll talk about that on the podcast tomorrow. You talk about underwhelming. You talk about a disappointment. You just take a look at that tournament. Even with the injuries. That's a whole other fucking segment. But that's all you have. That's it. You had the two matches in the middle. You had the two War Games matches. And when it was over, I was like, this is Survivor Series? This is it? This is the big stadium show here that they packed 46,000 people into this fucking building? Paying God knows how much money. But this is what WWE is these days. It's all about entrances. It's all about the big stars coming out. I mean, that's how they killed most of the time on this show. That's why we had four matches on this show. Everyone has to get the big elaborate entrance. We had fucking Jey Uso in the middle of a War Games match calling for an encore of his music so that he could climb to the top of the cage and perform sex acts on the cage. I don't know what he was doing up there. I guess he was yeeting the cage, but whatever he was doing, I'm watching this going, am I really seeing this right now? In the middle of a War Games match? That sums it up. That sums it up really well right there. I don't know what the fuck he was doing up there. But this is what WWE is. It's all about the stars. It's all about the big names, right? You hear the music. You want to pay to go to the show to hear the music and see the entrance. And that's what it's become. That has become the most important thing on the show. But I think what has happened is a lot of the storytelling has taken a back seat in many ways. And I've talked about how Triple H plays things very safe when it comes to his booking. I'm not saying you have to give away the store on every single show, but he plays it very safe, or he'll take stories or tensions between members of a faction. You talk about slow burn. I mean, he takes slow burn to a whole new level. Just look at the Judgment Day. I can't believe the Judgment Day is even still a thing at this point. Or everything he milked out of the blood. I mean, we can go on and on. So when Survivor Series was over, I said, man, this was not a great show. This was very underwhelming. And for four matches on the card, what do you expect? Those matches really have to overperform when that show is over for you to sit there and go, hey, you know what? This was a great show. No, this was not a great show. Could have been. But they'll turn around next year and do the same thing because, hey, we got 46,000 people. We'll just do it again next year. From now on, you're going to see Survivor Series in stadiums. This is going to become the new stadium show now, every single November. And we'll get the two War Games matches, and we're going to go through this over and over and over again. And my only hope is that in the future, in 2026 and beyond, that if they insist on continuing this format, and they're not going to take a break from it, that they at least can put together compelling enough stories that would warrant a War Games match. And they could tell those stories, and that we don't get the same fucking people, please, in these matches. Io Sky, I love Io Sky to death. She's great. She's one of the best in the entire world. We don't need to see her putting a garbage can over her head every single year and doing the same spot off the top of the cage. Kofi Kingston in the Royal Rumble, right? It was such a novel concept. Every time he would try to find a different way not to be eliminated in a Royal Rumble match. Until they did it so often, it just became old hat. And it's like, are we really still doing this shit? Then he started botching him. And it's like, all right, I think we need to put this shit to bed. Like, you can take something fun, but at some point, you got to move on. You can't just do it every single year. And please, if we're going to do a War Games match next year, can we not have Roman Reigns and the Usos and CM Punk on the same fucking team in the War Games match? Can we have a little bit more variety on that side of the fence? Please. This was the lamest stadium show that WWE has ever produced. And we're going to talk about it here. There was some good stuff on this show. It wasn't a total loss. But I am underwhelmed. This is your WWE Survivor Series War Games review. It is Sunday or Saturday, right? Technically still Saturday. November 29th, 2025. I am the Sala Monster. Thank you for hanging out with me here. The final WWE PLE, I guess, technically, of, well, I mean, some people might consider Saturday night's main event to be a PLE now that it's not on NBC anymore. But I don't. The final PLE here of the year. Hit that like button, hit that subscribe button. Super chats are open. I will be reading all of your messages, trying to answer your questions. Maybe you disagree with me. Maybe your thoughts on this show are a little more kind than mine. You could tell me why you think I'm wrong. Chime in. I will read your messages here as we go on. We're going to take this from the top here and go through this because they announced over 46,000 people in Petco Park in San Diego. By far the largest crowd ever for a Survivor Series.
Curiosity is killing me just like a cat would be killed by the curiosity, yeah.
Hey, Holiday, thank you for that Macho Man super chat. Macho Man and a cat. Well, you can't go wrong with that. At least it's a cat, not a snake. Didn't work out too well for him the last time when he was with a snake in the ring. But anyway, so 46,000 people at Petco Park. This show has been a thing since 1987. It's kind of hard to believe, honestly. SummerSlam, Royal Rumble, they've done them from football stadiums and baseball stadiums, and it took them this long to take Survivor Series there. But again, Survivor Series is always like the redheaded stepchild, you know, when it came to these PLEs. But they did open the show with War Games. Ah, when you hear the siren, the cage is lowered. We started with the women's War Games match. First outdoor War Games that we have ever seen in WWE. But I remember that outdoor War Games match at the Orange Bowl with the Horsemen against Team Dusty many years ago. Actually, I think that was the same year that Survivor Series started. I think that was back in 87. So they added a new rule. This was a new little wrinkle that they added into these War Games matches, a new forfeiture rule, where if anybody leaves the cage once War Games begins, their entire team would forfeit the match. That is new. I don't remember that being announced last year. I'll tell you what, those two blood and guts matches would have benefited from a rule like that. I'll tell you that much. I wish they would adopt that rule for next year. So we didn't get the shark cages this year. Usually in the aisleway on the stage, they have a shark cage on either side. Whoever doesn't start the match gets locked in the cage. Because of the configuration, they were at this baseball stadium, very narrow aisleway. They didn't have room for the cages. And also, honestly, did you expect to see Brock Lesnar standing in a tiny shark cage for 25 minutes or 30 minutes? Because he was the last one out for his team, so probably 30 minutes. He's standing around in this cage waiting to come into War Games. I don't think so. So we didn't get the shark cages. So instead, you were not allowed out to the ring until your number was called. It's like a Royal Rumble. You didn't know who was coming out next. Which I have to say, the bad part about doing it that way, you lose the visual of people in the shark cage, maybe jockeying for position if they want to be like the next person out to the ring. Like we got that last year when they had Roman and Punk, they were in the shark cage together. And I think Punk maybe wanted to step out at one point. Roman put his arm out to stop him. Like there was drama going on inside the cages. We don't have that now. Or if they just had them at ringside, right? You lose that because nobody's around. They just play their music and they come out to the ring. So that was the one thing that was missing here. And I should also point out, you had your own choice of logo, if this is your thing, on the corner turnbuckles, because the top turnbuckle, you had the Prime logo. The middle turnbuckle, you had the WWE logo. And the bottom turnbuckle, you had the Walmart logo. So this was the most corporate War Games in the history of War Games. Maybe that's part of the problem. Charlotte Flair started for the babyfaces. Asuka started for the heels. Charlotte beat Asuka in the advantage match on SmackDown last night. So the babyfaces had the advantage here. They wrestled for the first 5 minutes and nothing of note happened. Io Sky was out next. She had a garbage can lid or a shield of some kind. She had her name on it. So we got some Asuka and Io action here in this match. Yes, I saw the play. Yes, some of the turnbuckles also had a PlayStation logo. I did see that. But I'm just looking in some of the corners and I'm just seeing Prime and I'm seeing Walmart and I'm like, Riyadh season is on the canvas. I'm like, sensory overload with all of this stuff. Becky Lynch was out next for the heels with a kendo stick, and she went after Io with it until Charlotte took it away from her. The two of them went at it until Asuka grabbed Charlotte from behind. So Charlotte then dumped Asuka with an exploder. Becky did the same thing to Io, and then Charlotte and Becky turned their fire back on one another. Alexa Bliss was out next. That gave the babyfaces the 3-on-2 advantage while Asuka and Becky, they were in trouble. We only had 3-minute intervals. So again, when the match starts, whoever the first two people are, you got 5 minutes. And then from that point forward, everybody who comes out, it's 3-minute intervals. I know some people in the chat were confused by this. So Kairi Sane was on her way to the ring next. She had a green chain in her hand. She wrapped it around her fist. She used it as a weapon. Charlotte and Io, they ended up on the mat. They were tied up by the chain, tied up back to back. And the Kabuki Warriors came in with a double drop kick. AJ Lee was out next. This was her very first War Games. So Brock Lesnar and AJ Lee both. They popped their War Games cherries here at this show. Becky, though, held the cage door shut. So AJ was not able to get in. But see, in a WWE War Games match, there's no top on the cage. So she did the sensible thing. She climbed the cage to get inside. She took out Asuka and Kairi with a flying crossbody off the top rope. Not the top of the cage, the top rope. After that, she went right after Becky. We had a standoff between AJ and Asuka, which was the first time that we've seen these two go at it. AJ left the company in 2015. 2015 is when Asuka came into NXT, right? Because she didn't have her first WrestleMania match until 2018. So I'm pretty sure she came in 2015. So they missed each other, you know, by a matter of months. They're just part of two different eras of that women's division. So we got some action here with the two of them. Becky, though, attacked from behind before they could lock up initially. All three heels were ganging up on AJ until her partners made the save. Nia Jax entered next. She fared better than she did last year in War Games. Those chair shots, those weak-ass chair shots in last year's War Games, they still live rent-free in my mind. She was better than that this year. Today's episode is sponsored by Hims. Guys, if you're suffering from hair loss, you've probably tried something, or maybe multiple things, to find that magic potion to get your hair back. And if you're listening to this and you're like, hey, that's me, then this is for you. So listen up. You can forget all the trial and error, all the searching, like you're looking for buried treasure. What works for hair loss has been staring you right in the face this entire time. With Hims, you get access to clear solutions, expert guidance, and an online process that takes the confusion out of care. Hims offers convenient access to a range of prescription hair loss treatments with ingredients that work, including chews, oral medications, serums, and sprays. Doctor-trusted, clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil can stop further hair loss and regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. No hidden fees, no surprise costs, just real personalized care on your own schedule. You can think of Hims as your digital front door that you walk through to be transported back to your old self. With 100% online access to trusted treatments for real health concerns, all in one place. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/solomonster. That's hims.com/solomonster for your free online visit. hims.com/solomonster. Individual results may vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Featured products include compounded drug products, which the FDA does not approve or verify for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information. So that left two entrants left. Rhea Ripley was the last one out for the babyfaces. Her second War Games wearing a protective face mask. This one was a little bit different. This one was an homage to Art the Clown from the Terrifier movies. One of those half masks. So she came to the ring with two trash cans, and she had a bag slung over her shoulder with two kendo sticks. You knew that was for Io. She had a garbage can for her friend so that she could do her annual spot. Rhea put Kairi in a prism lock. At the same time, Io placed Kairi's head in one of the trash cans, and then she hit the ropes. Back and forth, over and over again, until finally she delivered a low drop kick to the trash can right into Kairi's head. Nia Jax cut them all off. Then it was time for the final entrant. And this is technically her first official main roster match as a full-time performer. It's her first ever cage match. And it's fucking War Games. This was the debut of Lash Legend, who just got engaged, by the way, to Trick Williams over Thanksgiving. So congrats to the two of them. She got into the cage and they rang the bell. Alicia Taylor officially announced that the War Games can now begin. And referee Jessica Carr was also in the ring. Lash put a hurting on a bunch of people until Rhea rose to her feet and waved to Lash in her Art the Clown mask. Lash popped her up, dropped her with a hard power bomb. And then when Rhea got up, she got absolutely mowed down by a pump kick for a near fall. Lash and Nia, they pressed Io over their head. They tossed her into the second ring where her teammates were kindly waiting to catch her. and they all fell down. We had Asuka holding Io in position for Kairi to come off the top with an insane elbow. And then Rhea broke up the pin attempt. We had a spot here, and this kind of goes to the dissension that they were teasing the last few weeks. Although apparently they had resolved all of their issues coming into this show. They tidied that up real quick. I was surprised they didn't really leave it as a mystery for this show. Would Charlotte and Rhea be able to get along? They tied that shit up over a week ago. I don't even know why they bothered to do that in the first place, if that's what they were going to do. You know, it's not like they were, you know, giving each other the side eye here in this match. But they did a spot here where Charlotte actually saved Rhea from being misted by Asuka. And instead, Asuka misted Lash Legend by accident. We didn't see Lash again after that. Charlotte and Rhea, they suplex Nia just for Alexa to come off the top with Twisted Bliss. And guess who ended up on top of the cage? Gee, I wonder. Who is on top of the cage? It is Io Sky. But she doesn't have the trash can. Now, AJ Lee, tiny little AJ, is down below on the mat. And she's got one of the trash cans. But she's trying to reach up and hand it to Io, but she's too short. So Io can't reach down and grab it. So Rhea Ripley comes over. And she places AJ on her shoulders so that she can hand the can off to Io. She places the trash can over her head. And we got the obligatory Io Sky cannonball dive off the, or just the dive, off the top of the cage. The flying trash can. Becky Lynch was left all alone. She tried to flee, which would mean her whole team would forfeit the match. Charlotte, though, pulled her down. Rhea hit Riptide. And then AJ got the Black Widow applied. And almost immediately, Becky tapped out. She starts tapping out furiously. Referee calls for the bell. And the babyfaces win War Games. About 40 minutes this went. I think both matches actually went right around the same time. I think this one went maybe 41. The other one went about 40. So they were about equal. This was as safe a War Games match as you will ever see. Not that there was a ton of heat, you know, going into this. Certain people have good heat, you know, like Becky Lynch. Obviously, the fans love Rhea Ripley. But, I mean, as far as, you know, putting these teams together, again, it felt very slapdash, I guess, the way that most of this was assembled here. And there just wasn't anything particularly, again, I said before, like war gamey about it. There really was nothing memorable. Io, she always nails that spot, and it's very impressive. But this is what, the third year, fourth year now of her doing it? Like, after a while, there's only so many different ways that you could do the same thing over and over again. It's like, okay, yeah, it's a cool spot, but it's no different than what we saw last year or the year before that. And that was the big spot of the match. You know, was Io doing her dive off the top? Of the 40 minutes we got, the first 30 or so was just very dull. It was very boring. And then it started to pick up a little more in the last 10 minutes. I thought it was smart for them to take Lash Legend out of the match in the way that they did. It was a way to protect her. I mean, obviously she didn't take the losing fall, but she had certain spots that she did. I thought that, you know, of the stuff they had her do, which was not a lot, she looked fine. Like, the pump kick was very impressive. Even when she throws, like, those forearm shots, they look devastating. So she threw that pump kick at Rhea. She did that one spot where her and Nia, they gorilla pressed one of the baby faces, I think it might have been Io, into the opposite ring. That's really all I remember of Lash Legend doing in this match. She didn't do a lot. And I think that was by design. Because, again, this woman just got called up from NXT. She has not had an official match on SmackDown or anywhere on the main roster since being called up until tonight. And it was War Games with all these other women. That's not a spot that she was ready to be put in, but it's the spot that she found herself in. So the limited amount of stuff they trusted her to do, I thought she did it fine, but she didn't really do a whole lot. And then they missed at her, and that was their way of taking her out of the match. Becky Lynch, you know, she took the losing fall. Becky already lost the Intercontinental title to Maxxine Dupri, and she's been losing her mind and going crazy on social media. She lost to Maxxine. She lost to AJ Lee at WrestlePalooza. She just tapped out to AJ again here at Survivor Series. She's due for a win, right? I think it's great that she's putting these people over. And that's great. It kind of fits the character that she's portraying right now. But she's also due for a big win soon. She's very entertaining, though, whenever she takes a big loss. And then coming out of that loss, she ends up just losing her fucking mind, which I suspect is what we'll see more of here. And by the way, did you notice who the referee was for this match? Jessica Carr. So I suspect that's something that Becky will definitely bring up. The other issue here with this match, and maybe this was part of the reason why it was so fucking dull for 75% of it, it's tough to do a War Games match when the baby faces have the advantage. Now, the problem is you can't just have every War Games match that they ever do where the heels have the advantage, because then that just becomes predictable. But that's the issue when you have two War Games matches. If you only had one every year, it would be a little bit easier to get away with. But you got two of them. And you can't well have the heels go over in both War Games matches every single year, right? So inevitably, you're going to have the baby faces have the advantage. That really doesn't work in a match like this. Ideally, it should be the heels that have the advantage, and the baby faces are forced to fight from underneath and rally the fans behind them. How are they going to survive? Oh my God, they're outnumbered. And you couldn't do that here because the baby faces won the advantage on SmackDown on Friday. So I don't think that helped this match either, but safe. Safest War Games match that you will ever see. Nothing terribly crazy. Nothing terribly memorable. Honestly, the most memorable thing about this match was probably Rhea's mask. That really says it all right there. Now, after this, we had John Cena in his final Survivor Series match, defending for the first time, and as it turned out, the only time, defending the Intercontinental Championship against the former champion, Dominic Mysterio. But before I get to this match here, I do want to make mention of our boy Boots, who just dropped a $50 bomb. What's going on, Boots? Where you been, buddy? He's here with us tonight. Boots, thank you very much. I hope you had a happy Thanksgiving. John Cena won the Intercontinental title for the first time in his career in Boston a few weeks ago. He is now a Grand Slam champion. Everybody can cheer. Yay, he's Grand Slam. I can't tell you how many times people were asking me this year, do you think John Cena is going to win the Intercontinental title? It's the only one he's never won. He's got to win the Grand Slam. And I'm like, I don't give a shit. Like, who cares? This guy's done everything else there is to do. If he retires and he was never the Intercontinental champion, believe me, it's hardly a blemish on his resume. And he already won the WWE championship this year. That would kind of feel like a step down. But people wanted him to win that title, and so to give people the feel-good moment, they did it a few weeks ago, and it was a nice feel-good moment. And then reality set in, where it's like, oh, he's got two matches left. And we have a pretty good idea of who he's wrestling in that last match. There's no way, there's no scenario that I can envision that would justify having that championship on the line in that match. So as quickly as they got it onto him, the realization set in that they need to get it off of him. The only question is, who's his opponent going to be at Survivor Series? Once they announced that it was going to be Dom in a rematch, it became clear, you know, how this was going to go. Dom was out to the ring with Raquel Rodriguez and Roxanne Perez. Cena got the big reaction that you would expect, you know, for this being his final PLE match. Alicia Taylor handled the in-ring introductions. Dom, he got a respectful reaction. It really wasn't overwhelmingly negative or overwhelmingly positive one way or the other. It was kind of in the middle. Especially considering they were in his hometown, I might have been expecting more of a positive reaction. But you know, it's John Cena. It's one of his last matches. So, I guess I'm not really shocked by that. So, Roxanne got involved early. She was tripping Cena, gave Dom the advantage. Then Raquel took a shot at Cena. So it was like a 3-on-1 handicap match here. And then they did a spot outside on the floor. The same spot that Penta did in his match with Solo Sikoa in the John Cena tournament on Monday night, which for Penta is just a pretty routine spot where he does a Rana off the top of the barricade and takes his opponent down to the ground. Unfortunately, on Monday, Penta got hurt, legitimately. They repeated the spot here, and they wanted you to know that someone got hurt on Monday and a match ended because of it. That's exactly why they did this spot. They were playing off of what happened with Penta. The funny thing is, Dom did the Rana to Cena. The bump that he took was far worse, it looked like, far worse than what Penta looked like when he took that bump on Monday night. He's the one who got legitimately hurt. Dom did not. But the way Dom landed right on his shoulder and like right on his neck, he got folded up. It actually looked more devastating than what happened to Penta on Monday. So he took a nasty landing and he was selling it like he was hurt. And the referee was checking on him. The referee got back in the ring to talk to Cena, let him know what was going on. You can see the doctors and the trainers outside the ring were tending to Dom. So now we're watching this going, wait, you know, is this legit? Like, that was a pretty nasty landing that he took there. But then inside the ring, while the referee's attention is diverted, we see Raquel Rodriguez get in. She actually hoists up Cena and drops it with a Tejana bomb. And then Cena pops back up and he takes a Pop Rocks from Roxanne Perez. If you would have told me that on this retirement tour, John Cena was going to take a fucking code red here from Roxanne Perez, I would have called you crazy, but that's exactly what happened here in this match. What a huge fucking spot for her to be able to say that in one of his last matches, she got to do a spot with John Cena and deliver her finishing move to this guy. Good for Roxanne. She gets to brag about that now for the rest of her career. So, of course, after this, Dom was suddenly okay. And he sprang back up to his feet and he got back in the ring. He delivered a 619. He went up top. He hit a frog splash. He covered. Referee Chad Patton refused to count. He was so angry and pissed off at Dom for feigning that injury that he just refused to count. He got up in his face. He was yelling at him. Then he ejected Raquel and Roxanne from ringside. So then came the scene of shoulder tackles. He did the five-knuckle shuffle. He got him up for an attitude adjustment. Dom slipped out, rolled him up. Cena, though, got the STFU applied. And Dom was able to make it to the bottom rope to force the break. Cena tried to drag him back to the center of the ring. The referee, though, pulled Cena away. And that allowed Dom to loosen his boot so that when Cena came back, he ended up pulling the boot off. So the Eddie Guerrero spot, you know, everyone makes the jokes. Dom makes the jokes, you know, about Eddie, you know, being his father, him taking after it. He looks so much like him, though. I mean, with the fucking mullet and everything, you would really think he's Eddie's kid. But boy, did he take it to the max. I mean, he takes it to the extreme as far as like cosplaying as Eddie Guerrero here, right down to all of his signature spots in almost every single match that he does. So we got the loosening of the boot. Now Cena's got the boot in his hand, the WrestleMania 20 spot with Eddie and Kurt. Dom then got Cena in the ropes for another 619, another frog splash with one boot on, mind you. Cena kicks out. So Dom puts the boot back on, but when he turns back around, Cena hoists him up and delivers an attitude adjustment and covers him, and Dom kicks out. So we got more shoulder tackles from Cena, but he caught Chad Patton with one of them. So there it is. There's the ref bump. So now you know shit's about to happen. So referee goes down, sure enough. Now he got the STFU applied again, but there's no referee. You big dummy. You knocked him out. He's like, where's the referee? There's no ref. But you know who is there? Finn Balor and JD McDonagh. They made their way down to the ring. They pounce on Cena. McDonagh goes for that moonsault that he does off the top for a beautiful moonsault. Cena, though, got the knees up. Balor then comes off the top with the coup de grace. Cena moves, so he rolls through. Cena then got Balor and McDonagh on his shoulders for a double attitude adjustment. They flash back to Dom outside, and he's grabbing the Intercontinental title, and he brings the belt into the ring with him. Cena ducks a belt shot, attitude adjustment again. Still no referee. Cena starts waving for a ref. He doesn't get a referee. Instead, what he gets is Liv Morgan's theme song. And everybody cheers because we haven't seen Liv in quite some time. They weren't expecting her. I was, but they weren't expecting her here on this show. Or even if they were expecting her, they're just happy to see her. And she comes out and she makes her way down to the ring. She sprints down to the ring. So what's she going to do? She confronts Dom and they're all smiles. And then she smacks the shit out of him. So then she turns to Cena, and again, she's all smiles, and she jumps up into his arms. Then the camera zooms in on her face. It's like when Cena turned heel at the Elimination Chamber, and he's hugging Cody, and the camera gets that zoomed-up shot of his face. So they zoom in on her face, and she gets this wide-eyed, like, possessed, crazy look in her eyes. And she jumps down, and she kicks Cena right in the dick. And he ends up in the ropes, in perfect position, as Dom gets back up, 619. That knocks Cena backwards into a belt shot. Liv hits him with the championship. So down goes Cena, and Dom goes back up, hits another frog splash. There's still no referee. So Liv goes and wakes up Chad Patton, who crawls over to count the three, and we have a new and new Intercontinental Champion. Liv jumps into Dom's arms after the match. The two of them celebrate. And after they left, they stop the music. And they had Cena, you know, they let Cena have his moment. And the crowd gave him a respectful standing ovation. And he saluted them and he made his way to the back. So I am of two minds on this. They had to get the title off of Cena before Saturday night's main event. So they accomplished that. That's good. And it's great to see Liv Morgan back. You know, I figured that we would see her here on this show. Some people thought maybe they'll wait until the Royal Rumble. But, you know, when I was gaming this out in my head, I'm like, Dom has to win this belt back. And he's not going to win the belt back clean, right? There's going to be some kind of fuckery in this match. Although I think I underestimated how overbooked this match was going to be. But I'm like, what can they do other than just having, like, Balor or McDonough or El Grande Americano? Because how fucking lame would that be, right? El Grande Americano interfering and costing John Cena. What the fuck are we doing here? All due respect to the great El Grande Americano. So, like, what could they do here to really shock people and have that big moment where it doesn't feel too cheap and you feel like you got something big out of it? You bring back Liv Morgan, right? We knew she was close to coming back. You know, we've seen her at some movie premieres recently, or maybe it was the Stranger Things premiere that she was at. She looks great, and she looked like she was ready to get back in the ring. So we got her here, and that's great. And that's another big name to get back in the women's division on Monday Night Raw. Today's episode is sponsored by Mint Mobile. Let's be honest. Most holiday gifts, they end up sitting in a drawer or that black hole that you call a closet. Or maybe in the spirit of feeling charitable, you give it away to somebody that you know. Well, this is not one of those times. Mint Mobile is offering unlimited premium wireless for just $15 a month. That's their best deal of the year. Also known as the only holiday gift that you'll actually use every single day. And it's true. Mint Mobile's best deal of the year is happening right now. Get a 3, 6, or 12-month unlimited plan for $15 a month. All Mint plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text on the nation's largest 5G network. And even better, you could take your current phone and phone number with you. There's no contract and no nonsense. You know, in my time using Mint, I have found their service to be fast and reliable. I haven't had any dropped calls, no surprise charges or overages. Paying my bill now as compared to how it used to be in the past with other providers has me very grateful for how much I'm saving each month. And I have everything I need. I'm so glad I gave Mint a shot. And you will be too. Especially with this special offer for Solomonster Sounds Off listeners. Don't get them socks. Get them premium wireless for $15 a month. Shop Mint Unlimited plans at mintmobile.com/Solomonster. That's mintmobile.com/Solomonster. Limited time offer, upfront payment of $45 for 3 months, $90 for 6 months, or $180 for 12 months, plan required, $15 a month equivalent, taxes and fees extra, initial plan term only, greater than 35 gigabytes may slow when network is busy, Capable device required. Availability, speed, and coverage varies. See mintmobile.com. But as one of Cena's last matches here, they overbooked this thing straight to hell. So you had Raquel and Roxanne out there. They're interfering and they're hitting moves and they're attacking Cena, right? So first it was them. Then we got the ref bump. Then we got Balor and McDonough. And then it was Liv. And then there was the belt shot and the nut shot. And the one right after the other, after the other. It wasn't even like one or two things. The whole fucking match. Now, there were some exciting moments during the match, sure. But when it was over, it was like, man, they really went all out with the bells and whistles here. It's almost like they were just trying to distract. Instead of just putting these two guys out there and letting them have a better match than the one they had in Boston a few weeks ago, because I know they have it in them to go out there on a big PLE like this, big stadium show, and have a memorable in-ring match. And then if you want to save some of the overbooking for the very end of it, I understand that. You know, you have a ref bump near the end, and then Liv comes out. Like, I get it. You know, I get all that. But from the very beginning, you know, even the faked injury and everything, that's really all this match was, you know? I understand that Dom is called Dirty Dom for a reason, and I know he's a heel. He's a chicken shit heel, and I get all that. But I do think that you could have done this in a way where you gave him a little bit more and made him look a little more legit than you did here without him just constantly needing help. They didn't do that. You know, they elected to go in the complete opposite direction. I don't know if it was because they really would rather Cena not go out there and have like a 20-minute knockdown, drag-out kind of match in the event that he gets hurt, because that would fuck things up royally. Right? If something went wrong, if he got hurt with one match left to go, I understand all that. But I was a little disappointed by that. My expectations for this match were higher. And maybe that's my own fault. But I thought what we saw on TV a few weeks ago, we would get the real match here on this show, right? Because this is a much bigger show. And it'll mean more then in the end if they do the big Liv Morgan thing and then Dom wins the championship. And instead, they just went, you know, the cheap route for the entire thing. So it was a fun enough spectacle, you know, for what it was and for the live crowd to see all that. I just thought Dom looked, you know, weak enough in that first match. But they did what they had to do. They got the belt off of John Cena. You had to get the belt off of John Cena. You gave the people what they wanted. They wanted the Grand Slam. He's got the Grand Slam. Now get the belt off of him. And now the question is, what happens as far as the future of the Judgment Day, right? Liv's back in the fold. Everything seemed hunky-dory on this show. We didn't have any interaction with Liv and Roxanne. Roxanne was already out of there. So we'll see how that plays out on television. They haven't really done anything recently with, like, nothing overt with Dom and Roxanne on TV, you know, where early on she was bringing him the chicken tenders and she was being all nice to him and They've really gotten away from that. So I don't really see what Liv Morgan would have to be upset about as far as that goes. But now she's, you know, she's the queen bitch and she's back. And so we'll see how that plays out on TV. There has to be some sort of fracture or dissension among the members of the Judgment Day now that she's back. We know that there were bad feelings between her and Finn Balor. Finn Balor was not really happy with her. So we'll see how that plays out now on TV. But we have one match left. That's it. We have one match left for John Cena, and he is done. December 13th. And we now know he's either going to face Gunther, Solo Sikoa. Can you even imagine? Jey Uso. Yes, I can. Or, who's the other one? I don't even have it in front of me. Gunther, Solo Sikoa, Jey Uso, or LA Knight. Poor LA Knight. I forgot he was even in the tournament. So one of these four men are going to challenge John Cena. It's going to be Gunther. I refuse to believe that it's going to be Jey Uso. Gunther will be the one wrestling John Cena in his final match. And I think Cena losing here makes it a lot more likely that he's going to win his final match. I just feel... Now, if Cena had his way, I'm sure it would not go that way. If it were up to John Cena, I think he would go out on his back, or he would pass out in the sleeper hold, because I don't see him giving up. It would go against everything that character has been about from day one. And you can make the argument that, man, what a huge feather in the cap for Gunther if he becomes the guy who actually made Cena give up. I cannot see a scenario where they allow that to happen. Can you imagine all the little kids crying in the crowd? He not only lost his final match, but he gave up. Like, there's no way that's happening. But I think him losing here makes it more likely he wins on December 13th. I just think that they're not going to want him to go out on a downer, you know, with back-to-back losses like this. You know, he really got fucked over here in this match with all the interference. And then for him to go in there in DC and then lose again, it makes sense because Gunther's sticking around and Cena's not, but I could see the company making an executive decision here, despite whatever Cena may want to do, and saying, look, no, you're going to go out the right way. You're going to go out with a win. It's like the Sting in AEW thing, where Sting, you know, supposedly Sting wanted to lose at Revolution last year. He wanted to lose in his retirement match, and he's old school. So I can absolutely see him saying, no, I'm going to lose. But it was Tony Khan who insisted, like, no, you're winning. Like, I've kept you undefeated this entire time. I have great reverence for you. You're the man. You're staying. You can't lose in your retirement match. Maybe WWE makes an executive decision here and says, you're going over. But I think this makes it more likely that that's what happens. Now, after this, Triple H has bought. Yeah, it is Triple H. Who knows how they're going to book this? I shudder to think how they're going to book this. A lot of the things they've done up to this point don't exactly inspire a lot of confidence. You know what, though? I'll be honest with you. It would make sense to have Gunther win, keep him strong, right? He's sticking around. In this case, though, this is a special circumstance. This is John Cena's final match. He's the ultimate babyface. I say him going out with a win is perfectly fine. Like, Gunther loses nothing by losing to John Cena. Let's be honest here. What does he lose if he loses to John Cena? He lost to fucking Jey Uso. There's nobody at this point that Gunther could lose to that's going to affect him. There's nobody. He lost to the Yeet Man at WrestleMania. Okay? And he's okay. He lived to tell the tale. If he loses to John Cena in a competitive match, he'll be fine. We had Stephanie Vaquer against Nikki Bella for the Women's World Championship. Nikki got a very flat reaction. Stephanie got a small pop. Nothing terribly overwhelming. So Nikki tried a cheap shot as the bell rang. Stephanie, though, came right back with a drop kick. She went for a knee drop on the apron that she missed. That gave Nikki the opening she needed. And at that point, she went to work, and the crowd went mild. You know, they had 46,000 people, supposedly. If it wasn't 46, it was pretty close. Inside this state, because they said they set some kind of record, so did they actually have 46, or did they really want that record so badly they added 2,000 people on? I don't know. They had 40-some-odd thousand people there. You would never know it. When you were watching this match, you would never know it. That's how quiet people were during this match. They did wake up momentarily when Nikki set up for the devil's kiss. She was doing a devil's kiss of her own. Vaquer, though, countered out of it, then went for that move herself. Nikki, though, rolled to the apron, much to the crowd's dismay. They booed that. So Vaquer ended up hitting her with the SVB, which is that backbreaker across the knee. That's her finish. And Nikki kicked out. So Stephanie avoided Nikki's rack attack 2.0, hit a corner meteora. Nikki came back with a disaster kick, followed by the rack attack, only for a two count when Stephanie got her foot on the bottom rope. So they ended up outside the ring. Stephanie cleared off the announce desk and gave Nikki a devil's kiss on top of the desk. And she slid Nikki back into the ring. She hit a proper devil's kiss, followed by this great-looking cork. I mean, they're always great-looking. It's a great move. The corkscrew splash off the top, mostly to her knees, but still. And she pinned her to retain the title. Thank God. I did think that there was at least a small chance they would pull that twin magic shit And this would be the return of Brie Bella. And that's the only way I could envision Nikki winning the championship here and giving her like a short run until Stephanie wins it back. I would put nothing past these people. Thankfully, they didn't do that. Look, Nikki did not do anything wrong here, right? It's not like she went out there and had this awful match and she was botching and fucking things up and they weren't on the same page. Like, she didn't do anything wrong here. She's just not very interesting to watch. And nobody cared about this. Nor did they buy into the idea that she was actually possibly going to win the championship here. And I'll tell you what doesn't help. What doesn't help is that you have a woman in Nikki Bella who has not won a match since July. She got a singles win over Chelsea Green in July. Okay, it's almost December. Why was she even in this position? Can you answer me that? I understand she turned on Stephanie and Stephanie was very upset. You could say that maybe Stephanie requested this match. On what planet should Nikki Bella, who has had one win in the last, 4 months, be challenging for the Women's World Championship on this show? Even in storyline, they had Raquel and Roxanne complaining about this. Roxanne picked up a few wins over some of these people on TV. How come she's not in championship contention? That's a valid point. So she didn't belong in this match to begin with. It's no wonder people just did not buy into this shit. It wasn't working. Week to week, you could tell it wasn't working. That awful segment, was it last week, where she attacked, it was at Madison Square Garden, I think, where she attacked Stephanie on the stage as Stephanie was about to come out. Threw her into the LED screen. Stephanie had to lay there for like fucking 2.5 minutes while Nikki cut her promo and not react and not go after this woman. Nothing they have done has really worked. But this was just as ordinary a championship match as you will ever see, let alone on a PLE. People just didn't care about it. Simple as that. They used it, I mean, probably in the stadium, they used it as a break to go to the bathroom or get food or something. Because they knew that the main event was coming up right after this. And you knew it was going to be a long match. So if you had to do any of that shit, you better get up and go do it now. You probably had people doing that at home. That's it. The only thing people ever really cared about in this match, to be fair, was when there was a tease of the Devil's Kiss. I'm starting to wonder what's more over. Is Stephanie really over or is it just the Devil's Kiss? I don't know. Because they didn't give a shit about anything else here. This should be one and done. You did it. You did the turn. You turned her heel. Then you beat her. Fine. It's time to move on. You got Liv Morgan back, right? You got people like Roxanne Perez who have made their case that they should be next in line. Maybe that's the point of contention going forward now with Liv and Roxanne in the Judgment Day, right? Liv wouldn't have any issue with Raquel going after the title because they're buds, right? They're besties. Liv, though, has no love, I'm sure, for Roxanne Perez. Maybe that could be the point of contention, you know, where Roxanne is in line or thinks she should be in line for a shot at the title. Liv doesn't really want to see that. Maybe that's the direction they take that in. Anything would be more interesting than just going back to this. So I'm sure, thankfully, this is a one-and-done situation. And after what felt like 30 minutes of ads and various segments, including the New Day and Grayson Waller backstage. Well, probably not. They probably taped it at TV this week. But they did have a TV screen with the Survivor Series logo on it in the background to make you think that they were there. Why even fly them in for this show? There would be no point. They would serve no purpose even being there. But they had a segment where the New Day and Waller, they were plugging on their phones some WWE game. I think WWE Supercard. Mobile game. Then they had a segment where Roxanne Perez, the heel Roxanne Perez, the one who just beat up John Cena earlier in the show, is shown backstage earlier in the day, surprising one lucky fan from the crowd by upgrading their seat. So we had, and I think that was sponsored by some mobile company. So we had that whole segment as well. So finally, 84 years later, we were ready for the main event on this four-match card. It all came down to this. This main event was going to have to over-deliver for this to be, in my opinion, a thumbs-up show. It was time for the men's War Games match. Oh, yes, the sirens are back. Enjoy the siren. It's the last time you're going to hear it until next year. Men's War Games with the World Heavyweight Champion, CM Punk. Starting things off with the much younger Bron Breakker, poor Punk. They had him start War Games. Would he be able to survive the 40 minutes? That was the question. So, Punk and Bron Breakker, which even before we saw the finish of this match, I'm looking at this going, this should be your next World Heavyweight Championship match right here. The heels had the advantage because Logan Paul and Drew McIntyre, they beat the Usos on Raw this past Monday. So, a totally different dynamic here from the women's match. And Breakker proceeded to beat the crap out of Punk for most of the next 5 minutes until Punk caught him with a clothesline off the top. But then it was time for the next member of Team Vision. And this was bad news for CM Punk because out comes Drew McIntyre, somebody who Punk is very familiar with, someone who Punk has a history with in a cage. Not the first time these two have met in a cage. It was a lot bloodier last time when they met. So they went at it for a little bit. Breakker got involved. Punk tried a running bulldog, but he got sent right into a Claymore kick. McIntyre started shredding Punk's face up against the side of the cage like a cheese grater. And good news for Punk, out comes his partner, the WWE champion, Cody Rhodes, makes his way down to the ring. But McIntyre held the door shut, so Cody couldn't get in. This is the same spot we already saw earlier in Women's War Games, right? With Becky and AJ. It repeated the same spot here. And as AJ did earlier, Cody's like, okay, I'll just climb in. So Cody climbs to the top of the cage. He hits a crossbody off the top of the cage onto Drew McIntyre. Cody Cutter drops Bron Breakker. And then an inadvertent elbow by Cody knocks down Punk, who's not happy about it. And Punk, by the way, is bleeding. So when his face was being raked across the cage earlier, he was not bleeding. Now he's bleeding. And it's like, okay, it's, from that spot. Michael Cole on commentary, though, he chimes in and he said, I don't know how that happened. Well, gee, Michael, I don't know. Maybe it had to do with the fact that this man had his face raked across the steel. It's just a thought. Maybe that has something to do with it. And it wasn't like an inordinate amount of blood. It's not like what we saw last week. But he had some blood. And look, it's nice to see a little bit of blood at least. If you're going to have a War Games match, you're going to have really any cage match. Even the amount of blood we saw in Punk and McIntyre last year, like that was a lot. And Drew claims, it was not meant to happen. It was accidental. I mean, I think he ended up bleeding in that match accidentally on purpose. I think the two of them, they knew, okay, look, this is the blow off to our feud. We've had this blood feud, no pun intended, but we've had this blood feud for the whole year. If we're going to do a Hell in a Cell match, you know what? Better to ask forgiveness than ask permission. And we got a lot of blood in that match. So here it was just a little bit. But I was wondering coming into this if we would get any color at all. I knew it wasn't going to be a blood and guts situation, but like any color at all. So we did. We got a little bit of it here. So after this, Cody and Punk, they worked together. So that little moment there where there was that accidental elbow, I thought, oh, that's interesting. Are they going to push that further in the match and tease maybe Cody and Punk at WrestleMania? Because see, that would be a WrestleMania direction that would interest me. That's a match we haven't seen before. That's a match that they've teased in the past. They've had some run-ins, like one in the backstage area that I can remember, where they kind of teased, maybe they're going to have a match. We still haven't seen it. See, that would appeal to me far more than some of these other rumored WrestleMania matches that have been talked about. But that was the only moment in the entire match where the two of them had any sort of issue. After that, it was all good. So not only that, but Cody got Bron Breakker. There were two tag team moves that they did together. They did the old Hart Foundation heart attack where Cody held him and then Punk came off the ropes with the clothesline. Then the scary one. They did the old Road Warriors doomsday device. Bron Breakker took a sickening bump on the back of his neck. Because when he fell, just the way he landed and the way his neck bent and all of his weight, you know, came down on him, he had a terrible landing here. And they replayed it. We couldn't see it, but apparently they had the doctor. I don't know if the doctor went into the cage, but the doctor went over to the cage to check on him and make sure that he was okay and he wasn't seemingly concussed and he could continue the match, and he did. But man, I mean, that landing he took, you know, that reminded me of back in the day when LOD would hit that move if they were in like a, you know, against a couple of jobbers on a Saturday morning. They just, all those guys, they brutalized those jobbers back then. He took a jobber bump. That's what he took. Because I've seen some doomsday devices. I've seen LOD and the Steiner brothers. I just mistreat, frankly, some of those guys. And the way that they would take those bumps was just horrifying. So, yeah, it was a little scary there. Cody and Punk, they continued to work together on McIntyre while Breakker stayed down in the corner. Logan Paul was out next. And I was about to say, you know, it's nice to not have everybody coming out. Everybody's got to be armed with a weapon, right? It's kind of nice. Because I don't think up to this point anybody came out with anything. And I spoke too soon. Because as soon as Logan Paul got down to the ring, Drew McIntyre was like, hey, grab some chairs. So he went under the ring and he grabbed a pair of chairs to bring into the cage. Logan did a running dive out of one ring onto Punk in the other ring. Logan started climbing the cage, so Cody followed him up. They were now sitting on top of the cage, and they were trading shots. He did the yay boo spot up there. Breakker reached up with one of the chairs, and he smacked Cody in the leg or the thigh with it, and Cody scampered back down. Jimmy Uso was out next, and he slammed the cage door on Bron Breakker's head, which is the last thing that Bron Breakker needed after that fucking bump he took earlier. Then he went to retrieve a table from under the ring, and he slid it into the cage. Big Jim grabbed the Slim Jim. We had the Slim Jim table, so that gets placed in the cage. He caught Logan with a Samoan drop. Then he hit a whisper in the wind to take out a couple of the heel. I think it was a Breakker and Logan that he took out. You know, I'm watching this, and I've seen him do that move in several matches this year. But, like, I watch Jimmy Uso. And the thing about Jimmy is that he is the better of the two Usos when it comes to in-ring. He's also the one who really originated, or of the two, started doing the yeet stuff. It didn't catch on when he was doing it. So all of these things are true, but it was Jay who got it over. So Jay will always be the bigger of the two Usos. It's just a fact. Jimmy is never going to be over at that level. But bell to bell, not that their styles are radically different. They are very similar. There's a lot of super kicks and Samoan drops and Uso splashes and all that. But he does more in the ring than Jay does. Like, he is, I think, slightly more complete in-ring performer than his brother. But his brother will always be more over than he is. It's the power of the yeet, even though he started doing it first. Bronson Reed was out next. That gave the heels the 4-on-3 advantage. Last year, if you saw this show, you saw this man come off the top of the cage with an attempted tsunami. It went horribly wrong, and he broke his talus bone, his ankle. It was a severe injury, one that he is still not 100%. I don't think he'll ever be 100% fully recovered from. Like, he has said that he is in pain every single day from that injury. When he's out in the ring, the adrenaline kicks in, he's not thinking about it, and so he doesn't feel it as much. But that's terrifying, you know, to come off the top, hurt yourself that badly, and now you have this chronic injury and this chronic pain that will never go away for doing a dumb spot. Like, somebody like him should never, ever be coming off the top of the cage like that. It's scary enough when someone half his size comes off the top of the cage. When Io Sky comes off the top of the cage. I don't know what he was thinking. He wasn't. Thankfully, he was a lot smarter about it this year, and he didn't try anything like that. But as soon as he got in the ring, he delivered a tsunami to CM Punk. He went to another corner. He delivered one to Jimmy Uso. And then he delivered one more to Cody. Still, though, you can't win the match. War Games has not officially begun. There's no referee in there. There's no pinfalls yet. There's no submissions, so it doesn't count. Cody is bleeding now. That I did not see how that happened. But now Cody was bleeding a little from over his right eye. So that makes Cody and Punk. That was the only blood we had in the entire match. And it wasn't a lot. As a matter of fact, I think by this point, Punk wasn't even bleeding anymore. It washed away. It was already gone. So if you were looking for blood in War Games, you got a little bit of it, but you didn't get too much. So the Yeet Man was out next. Here comes Jey Uso. The Usos drop Logan Paul with a 1D. Then Jey looks in the camera and he's motioning. He's like, he wants him to run it back in the middle of this War Games match. It's like in the middle of a match when Rikishi and Too Cool would put the glasses on and they would start dancing in the Royal Rumble, right? That was fun. I guess this is supposed to be like a modern day version of that because they start playing his music again. He climbs the ropes and then he climbs to the top of the cage. And he's on top of the cage here, not standing on top of the cage, but he's up there and he's basically fucking the cage. It's like dry humping the cage. I don't know what he's doing up there. I don't know what he's doing, but you should cover all the children's faces because whatever he was doing up there was very unnatural. And so this is what was going on here in the middle of this War Games match. And they had this shot and all the people in the crowd are just, you know, they're putting their hands up and down and they're eating in the middle of War Games. Fucking the cage. I don't think that cage ever gave him consent. Brock Lesnar had enough of this bullshit. They didn't even put a countdown clock on the screen. They just hit his music. He's like, fuck this, I'm going out. I don't know what's going on out here, but we got to put an end to this. So here comes Brock. And thankfully, he didn't slip and fall during his entrance. He comes out with Paul Heyman. This was the first time, they mentioned this on commentary. This is the first time that Brock has been part of any kind of match where he had teammates, any kind of tag situation, since 2004, over 20 years ago. And it really did feel like a novelty here because it's weird seeing him out there. Like we've seen him in Rumbles and stuff, but not actually partnering with and tagging with other people. So he gets in, of course, what does he start doing? He starts suplexing everybody. Including an overhead suplex where it looked like he dropped CM Punk right on his head. Punk even grabbed his head after, like, his forehead to make sure he was okay. F5 to Jimmy Uso, F5 to Punk, F5 to Cody Rhodes. Then the Yeet Man ate an F5. Lesnar was the only man left on his feet. He was surveying the damage. Cody tried to get back into it. Brock sent him flying with an overhead throw. So then he starts killing dudes with chair shots to the back, one right after the other. But the countdown hit. There's only one man left to enter this match. Of course, they saved these two guys, Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns, for the end of the match. Because we haven't had enough of Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns over the years. The countdown begins. Brock calls for the door to open. He steps out of the cage and is standing on the steps, okay, that lead into the cage. Now I see this and I'm like, has he forgotten the rules? Is he going to step out of this cage? Because I'm thinking, you know, from the moment that the first two came out, you cannot leave the cage. Technically, though, that's not true. And then I realize, okay, I see. That's the loophole here. You can fight outside the cage only when War Games officially begins. Then the match begins. Then you can't leave the cage. If you leave the cage, you forfeit for your entire team. We haven't gotten there yet, though, right? That announcement has not yet been made. Roman hasn't actually gotten into the cage yet. So Roman Reigns comes out, and he's coming down the aisle. Brock leaves the cage, and he goes to the head of the aisle, and he's waiting for him. And here comes Roman. He flies in with a Superman punch, and then another. And they end up on the opposite side where the announce desks are. And Roman gets a running charge and Brock scoops him up out of midair, and he puts him through one of the announce desks with an F5, and the desk collapses. So Lesnar picks him back up. He throws him into the side of the cage a few times and then into the ring steps, puts him inside. And then finally, we get the announcement from Alicia Taylor. They ring the bell. The War Games match has now begun. See, so now they cannot leave the cage. Those are the rules. So we get an F5 to Roman Reigns. Cody, though, saved the match. He prevented the pinfall. Punk got Lesnar up, and he hit Brock with a GTS. And then Cody hit Crossroads on Lesnar. Lesnar is such an underrated seller. Even still, I mean, he's been doing this for a long time.
Jerry Lawler loves Gunther the Magnificent. All hail Gunther.
You know, when the Mighty One shows up, you know it's a good night. Boots with another $50 bomb. The Boots Bomb. How far can he go? I don't know. Thank you, brother. But yes, Brock took some good bumps here. So Logan Paul then, he calls for the brass knucks. Paul Heyman is outside the cage. And Logan is calling for the knucks. And Heyman pulls him out and he hands the brass knucks to Logan Paul. And I'm watching this and I'm going, why didn't he just bring them to the ring with him? Like, other people came and they immediately brought weapons into the cage. This is one of those times where it's like, okay, you should have just brought them in yourself. You don't really have to rely on somebody else to hand them to you unless you're that lazy. Just stick them in your tights. Now, for whatever reason, he needed Paul Heyman, I guess, for the dramatic reveal of the Nux. So Heyman hands the Nux to Logan Paul. He puts them on his hand and he knocks out Cody with a punch. He did the same thing to Jimmy. He told Roman to get up. Reigns, though, downed him with a spear, and he pulled the knucks off Logan's fingers. Now they're on Roman's hand. So now he delivers a Superman punch with the knucks to Bronson Reed and then to Drew McIntyre as McIntyre came flying off the top rope. Breaker pulled down the straps. Roman, though, basically was like, fuck you, and he took down Bron Breakker with a spear. So Roman calls for Jay to pick Lesnar up. He's going to do some damage to Brock Lesnar. Instead, Brock scoops up Jay, and he's got Jay in position for an F5, right? So he's going to give him an F5. Roman charges in anyway. There's a table. The Slim Jim table is propped up in the corner, and so all three men, as Roman comes in for the spear, all three men end up crashing through the table in the corner. So now they're laying in the debris. In the other ring, McIntyre delivers a low blow to Cody Rhodes. Breaker got into the other ring, and he cuts down Cody with a super spear, right? He bounces off the ropes a few times. Down goes Cody. And Breaker, I noticed, had a nice shiner under his eye. Punk hit a go-to-sleep on Logan Paul, who kicked out just as a mystery man. At least I think he kicked out. Just as a mystery man was climbing into the cage. This person was dressed in all black. Had a black, looked like a hoodie, I guess a mask on. I mean, I think he was covered from head to toe, but in all black. He scales the cage, and he climbs inside. He delivers, Punk was on his knees. He delivers a super kick to Punk, hits the ropes, comes off, and delivers a curb stomp. And everybody in the crowd is like reacting like they think this guy's going to pull his mask off and reveal Seth Rollins. And I'm like, that would make no sense. That would be the dumbest thing ever. He never revealed himself. Everyone's looking at him. Bron Breakker's looking at him with this shock look on his face. And this person's looking around. And he quickly scales the cage and he leaves. And we never find out who the person is. The mystery man flees. He's gone. And then at that point, Bron Breakker cuts down Punk with one final spear. And he pins the world heavyweight champion to win War Games for Team Vision. After the match, all the heels, they exit the cage, including Brock. They're all smiles. They're all posing arm in arm. They shoot off pyro behind them in the background. And again, it's just very weird to see Lesnar cohabitating with other people here. After the music stops, they cut back inside the cage. And Roman helps Punk up, and he actually gives him a fist bump. Then Cody got up on his own when it looked like maybe Roman was maybe going to help him. And the two of them go face to face. And Roman tells him that's the last time that we ever team. Just know that. And he exited into the other ring where his cousins were. And that is how they went off the air. That is how Survivor Series went off the air. In terms of action, I thought it was a fine War Games match, right? There was some pretty good action in this. Some big spots with like the tables and the plunder and stuff. Even just Brock being in there added a new dimension to it because he's never been in one of these before. So it was unique in that sense. I mean, he did a lot of what you would expect him to do. I thought, maybe it was just me hoping, but I kind of thought that maybe they would have, even if it was like a miscommunication spot or something, where there would be a moment, even if it was a fleeting moment of a hint of something with him and Bron Breakker, to tease a future match between Lesnar and Breakker. They did none of that. There was none of that in this match. I thought that it was much better than what we got with the women. The women's War Games match was just too stale and just too safe. We got a little bit of blood here in this match, which was fine. We did get action outside the cage with Brock and Roman. Again, they had that little loophole where it's allowed until War Games officially begins. But that really was it. I mean, they just limited it to that. And that's fine. It's like, you know, when I was talking about the blood and guts matches that AEW did, it's like, and in both matches, more so in the men's, it was like just this constant stream of people going in and out. And those matches have a top on the cage. And it's like, what are we doing here? You know, there's got to be at least a happy medium where if you're going to do something on the outside, leave it to two people to do one big spot or something, you know. But these matches, you could say this about all cage matches, I guess, but like, especially in this case, like, you should keep the action inside. They're like a bunch of caged animals locked in. You got two rings, right? You got plenty of room, plenty of space. They bring all the shit inside anyway. There's no reason to be doing all this crazy stuff outside. So in this match, they just left it to Brock and Roman. It was brief, and then they brought the action inside. I like that rule, by the way. The rule they adopted about forfeiture, I think if they continue doing these matches, that should be the new rule going forward now every year. I like Bron Breakker pinning CM Punk. I like that they took the guy, the younger guy, who everybody has pinned their hopes and dreams on. Paul Heyman says it every fucking week, right? He's going to headline the next 5 or 10 WrestleManias. And they've really, you know, been building him up. And he was the one to beat CM Punk in this match. So often, it feels like they play it safe when it comes to the big names. And they still do. But in this case, there were so many big names in the match. To just go in there and beat Jimmy Uso, which would have been the easy thing to predict, what does that accomplish? If you beat either one of the Usos, or let alone Jimmy Uso, who is probably by default the weak link of the team, so you beat Jimmy Uso, who gives a fuck? Who cares? You know what would be more impressive? If you beat Roman Reigns, if you beat CM Punk, if you beat Cody Rhodes, and then that could potentially set up a huge match for down the road. So now they have put Bron Breakker in prime position to challenge for the World Heavyweight Championship. WrestleMania, though, is in mid-April. You can't put this off until WrestleMania. To be honest with you, this should be Punk's next challenger. I don't even know if they're going to wait until the Rumble. They got two Saturday Night's main events between now and then. They got one next month, and they have one the week before the Rumble. But to me, that could be the Rumble title match. And if you do that match, if it were me, I would belt them up. Because they're in a position right now, they got a lot of older guys in the main event scene and a lot of guys that have been there for a very long time. Okay, I'm looking at you, Roman. And it's time that they get serious for all the young talents that we hear about. Oh, they have all this great young talent in NXT that it's going to be called up. At some point, you got to pull the trigger on somebody. You got Obafemi waiting in the wings, right? Jacob Fatu, when he comes back from his injury, which he shouldn't be gone for that much longer. He might be gone in a matter of weeks. He's another one, right? There's any number of guys that you can start to seriously push right now and get them in that main event picture because they need that. They need more of that. They need to go all the way with these guys. I don't want to hear, oh, they're a year away. They're 2 years away. They're 3 years away, right? They need to be the here and now mixed in with these other names. This is a big win for him tonight. Now, what are you going to do with it? Where is it going to lead? Where are you going to go with it? That's where they should go with it. That's my hope. So I like that finish that they did here. I like how that went. The mystery men stuff, again, anybody thinking it's Seth Rollins, just if you take 2 seconds to even think about it, it makes no sense. It's the stupidest thing. Anybody who buys into that, you're being unbelievably stupid. The man was the world heavyweight champion. Okay, he's not forfeiting that championship as part of some elaborate hoax after he just pulled a hoax in July to win the world heavyweight championship. On top of that, Bron Breakker and Bronson Reed beat the fucking shit out of him. So it is not Seth Rollins. They wanted you to believe it was. It is going to be Austin Theory. I believe Austin Theory will be the next member of the Vision. And all I can say about that is I certainly hope that they are more serious about pushing him this time than they were 3 years ago. Because all they have done with him since then is keep him in largely a comedy role. He was comedy fodder. That's a hard thing to come back from. Not impossible, but it's a hard thing to come back from when people see you at this level down here, and now they want you to believe that, oh, this guy's in the top heel faction in the company. He could be a world championship contender, right? But you know what? You got to try. He's another one of those young talents. I mean, he's very talented. I still think we have yet to see him come out of his shell. We saw him as a babyface in NXT. He was doing comedy stuff is part of the way with Johnny Gargano and Candice LeRae. He was being very goofy. You remember him and Indy Hartwell? It was like they were their son and daughter. And then on the main roster, he's been a heel. His entire time on the main roster, he's been a heel. But he's rubbed shoulders with John Cena. He's rubbed shoulders in the ring with The Rock. There have been hints that they had plans for this kid. And then they did nothing with him. So he deserves a fresh start to show what he can really do. And him being part of the top heel group on Raw is going to put him in that position. At that point, it's up to him. He either sinks or swims. But I do think it's going to end up being him. I'm not going to sit here and spend any more time coming up with who else it could be. It's not Rollins. It's not Chris Jericho. It's not Randy Orton. You're either looking at Austin Theory or you're looking at someone new who they're calling up from NXT to potentially join the Vision. That's really plain and simple all it is. But I think we're looking at Theory. You know, again, Meltzer, he was the first person to bring up Austin Theory's name in relation to Survivor Series. He brought up Theory and he brought up Lash Legend. We got Lash Legend. The only reason we did not get Theory in this match is because Seth Rollins got hurt. So for his sake, I hope that they can recalibrate and get him back to whatever they were planning on doing with him. I mean, that would suck if they had big plans, but because somebody else got hurt, it ends up fucking him over in the end. Look at poor El Clone in AEW. Fucking Hologram gets hurt, and this guy just lost his entire push, right? What a shitty situation to be in. Don't be an El Clone. So I think that's who it's going to be. The only question now is when they do the reveal. Do they do it on Raw this week? Do they save it for, I don't know, Saturday night's main event or something? I think it was very lame doing the finish the way they did here. You have this War Games match and then this mystery person in all black comes in and plays right into the finish and then leaves. As far as a finish to this match, I like that Braun won, but it was still a very lackluster way for a War Games match to end. Just the way they did it. I thought that was very lame. So we'll see if they do the reveal on Monday or not. Just, again, when this show was over, I just said, man, 4 matches. And none of these matches are going to be anything I'm ever going to want to go back and rewatch for a second time. I mean, it was a very missable show, honestly. And as far as the War Games concept is concerned, they better get their act together when it comes to this stuff in the future. Really shake it up or just take a different approach to it in some way or just put it on the back burner for a year. Or even if you want to switch off and do one War Games match a year, whichever one you feel is the appropriate one to do, the one that you think you have the stronger stories to support. Maybe that's the men's, maybe that's the women's. Go with that one. Maybe you don't have to do two. I know that, you know, you have to do two of everything every year. That's the way it is, right? The 2 Rumbles, the 2 Chambers, the 2 Money in the Banks, 2 War Games matches. For me, you really want to have the story to support it, or a rivalry to support it. And it's hard, you know, especially when injuries happen. It's hard sometimes to put these things together. But when these are the matches that carry these shows, and you're not really booking anything else, you really need those war games to deliver in a major way. The women's match did not. The men's match was better than the women's match, but it wasn't like they hit a home run with it or anything. Even the Cena match, you know, I found that to be, you know, underwhelming as well, just in terms of the approach they took with all the overbooking in that match. But they gave you the Liv Morgan return to give you something big coming out of that match. And the women's world title match was a complete waste. I'm sorry. It was just a complete waste of time. This was, honestly, probably one of the worst Survivor Series that I can remember seeing. This will not go down by any stretch as one of the better Survivor Series shows they've ever done. And hopefully we will not get any more of these four-match PLEs. But whether you have four matches or five matches or six matches, you have to put matches together that are going to be engaging and that people are really going to want to see. I don't know for how much longer they'll be able to get away with just booking big names, right? That's what they said coming into the show. We have an all-star team in the War Games match. That's great. That's great. You have a lot of big matches in there. But you can't just get by saying, hey, you know, we're just going to stuff a bunch of big names into a match and here you go, right? There has to be more to it than just that. I was very underwhelmed by what we got from this show tonight. Let's take a look at the Twitter poll. What did you think of Survivor Series? 39% thumbs up for tonight's show. 61% thumbs down. 2,000 votes. I mean, that says it all right there. And there'll be more votes coming in as the night progresses. That is not a good score. Not a good score, so clearly I'm not in the minority on this. This was not a very good Survivor Series show. Yeah, 7 to 8 is the sweet spot. I don't know. You know what? It's not even necessarily about a specific number at that point. Even 6 is fine. But again, like, you know, 4 matches. In a stadium show, you got 45,000 people. You're giving them 4 matches. Like, what are we doing here? 4 matches? I don't even know if they gave them any, dark matches beforehand. That's probably all they gave them here on this show. But hey, everybody was yeeting. So, I don't know. I guess they got their money's worth. They got to yeet. For $810 per ticket. I'm just glad that we are we're done with all these war games, blood and guts. Thank God. 4 of them. We had 4 of these matches in the span of like less than 2 weeks, or maybe roughly 2 weeks, whatever it was, 2.5 weeks. I'm done with it. Save it for next year. Oh man, we had north of 2,500 people in here, and I want to know what you thought of Survivor Series tonight and these War Games matches and where things may possibly be headed as we head into 2026 now that we have some names back, maybe a new member of the Vision. Prince Vegeta, I just turned 30 last week and slowly remnants of my childhood are fading away like tears in the rain. Thank you for the memories, John Cena. I just wish they booked your retirement year better. Yeah, it's a sin. The way they fucked up parts of his retirement tour. And it's wasted time. And there were so many other matches that I would have loved to have seen him in. Old opponents that he never got the chance to work with. Even new faces. Drew McIntyre just said that he really regrets that he didn't have a chance to be one of Cena's final matches this year. How did you not do that match? Like, there were just so many missed opportunities, and then that botched heel turn that was 10 years too late or 12 years too late just fucked it all up. Winston Slip, CM Punk with the Halloween 3 gear. Oh my God, did I not even notice? I don't even know if I noticed. Toya. Says, why the fuck are we, I think she meant yeeting during War Games. Why are we yeeting during War Games? Don't look at me. Don't look at me. I just love how Brock was the next one out. Like, yeah, I can't stand this shit. I'm coming out now. I'm coming out early. I'm not even waiting for you to put the countdown clock on the screen. Play my music. Fabian says, I hate the trope of lay around until it's my spot. Yeah, but that's probably three quarters of these War Games matches. To be honest with you, that's probably most of the triple threat and fatal four-way matches you see. Oh, man. Oh, the real CS. I don't know, brother. You may have had a bad connection. It might have been your internet. I've never had any issues. But I'm sorry it didn't work out for you. I heard from some people tonight who actually use it, and they had no issues. Robbie, I think it's time we had a talk about this run it back. Not every situation calls for it. This was definitely one of the most unnecessary times. They wanted that crowd shot of everybody in the crowd yeeting. And they got what they wanted. They wanted the yeet. They got the yeet. Ragnarok says, I'm going to be honest with you. That show sucked. Yeah, it was not great. There were some things I liked, but it was not a great show. Honestly, one of the lamest, if not the lamest stadium show, like big stadium show that this company has ever produced is what we got tonight. Four matches. And that's what we got. Robbie says, women's match was very anticlimactic. Why not let Becky get her win back, especially when the babyfaces had the advantage? Because the heels were winning in the men's match. I don't think they wanted two heel wins in War Games. Also, at this point, with what this company does, whoever it is, the answer is going to be underwhelming. Yeah, you know, it feels that way, doesn't it? Holiday says, hey, Solo, this was the first Big Four pay-per-view that I decided to miss. The card was underwhelming and the feuds weren't strong enough to justify War Games matches for the men and the women. War Games needs to be shelved for a while. Yeah, you know, I wasn't really into this idea previously. I think somebody had asked me about it, but I would even entertain the idea of trying the Iron Survivor thing as like a new gimmick. I mean, me personally, I would love to see a return to the traditional elimination format, mixed in with some regular like singles matches, and then come back with War Games the following year. But even trying a totally new concept, like I'd be open to that. But just the need for there to be War Games. And the problem is, like, the advertising for this show was out months and months ago, and it said War Games. So it's not like they have until, like, the last minute to make up their mind about whether or not we have good stories that justify a War Games match. They're going to be advertising this shit in the spring. And once they start putting posters and you know, graphics out that say War Games, that's it. They're committed to it. But then it's up to them to put together matches and stories that are compelling enough to justify a War Games match. That's the issue. Oh, man. Boots, I'm going to get to your message in a little bit here. Ray Wrighton. AEW gave us a swerve, return, and Samoa Joe the title, while WWE gave us that ending, which was very much a choice. Oh, it was a choice. Yeah, it was. I don't want to start comparing the two. Everything's just very tribalistic, but it was certainly a it was the right choice as far as who won the match, as far as who went over at the end, how they went about doing it. I agree. Duff's Vid says, "Why do Santa's elves have depression? They have low elf esteem." So should the person who came up with that joke. Aaron says, War Games is boring because it is just stalling until everyone enters. You can skip 90% of the match and not miss much. It should be elimination. It's a fair point. It's kind of like the criticism of an Iron Man match where you watch it. I mean, you could start racking up wins early on in the match, but like most people realize you don't really get excited about it until you're in the last 15, 20 minutes, right? Because nothing, not that it doesn't matter, but it's almost like nothing matters in the first half of the match, which is why unless you have the right two people, like a lot of Iron Man matches can just die on the vine and be very boring. That was kind of the issue I had with the very first one. But it's true, like War Games does not officially begin until everybody is in the cage. So you can hit your finisher and do big spots, but like it doesn't matter because the match can't end. So, I mean, you're not wrong. Holiday. Tonight's pay-per-view is on track to be the most financially successful Survivor Series. 1,000 out of 44,000 tickets were left. I feel sorry for people who attended. Cena's last pay-per-view match was the only thing worth paying to see. Yeah, I mean, you get to say that you were there for his last PLE match. You got to get the Cena entrance one last time. You know, there are people who are going to say, oh, it was totally worth it. I got to see John Cena for the last time, and I got to yeet, and I got to see Brock Lesnar. And again, the company has become more about moments in the last few years. It's more about the moment than anything else. And you can get away with that if you have a lot of other really good stuff going on. And then you stick a bunch of big moments in there. But, you know, especially these weekly shows, like on Fridays in particular, it's just the product has gotten so stale and so predictable and just so blasé. And now SmackDown's going 3 hours soon. And it's like, oh, I just, it's just, it's hard. It's hard to sit through. Boy, we got a lot to get to here. Jake Johnson, with Cena retiring and how bad the PLEs are, now is a good time to cancel the overpriced ESPN app. I'll tell you what, though, they're going to be in some trouble when Cena has that last match and they no longer have the big John Cena match to rely on. And, you know, they packed in Boston, they packed in Madison Square Garden, 16, 17,000 people. They only have Cena for one more match, and then he's gone. Are they going to be able to still put up numbers like that when John Cena is not around anymore? Who's that next big attraction? That's what they need to worry about. That was one thing they had this year to rely on, were those John Cena appearances, and they ain't going to have that no more. They will no longer be able to rely on that. Luis. The women's babyface team have won every year. Is that true? Have they won every year? I know they've won most of the matches. I didn't realize that they have literally won every year, if that's true. We have got Kurger Bing. Can Brock Lesnar please just go away already? He ain't going nowhere. Dude, they paid him and had him under contract the entire 2 years that he was off TV. They're not suddenly going to get rid of him. The Uffman. Bold prediction. By 2030, TKO will have all PLEs be two nights. I thought you were going to say by 2030, TKO will have sold to the Saudis. None of this would surprise me. Gary Koshchuk, what's going on, Gary? Is this the first team match Lesnar has been in since he came back in 2012? Yes, it is. First team match he's been in since 2004. That was the first time he left the company. I don't even know what match that would have been. He only wrestled the first 3 months before he left. Maybe it was a tag match on SmackDown, maybe? So I know at No Way Out is when he lost the belt to Eddie Guerrero. Luis, where do you think Theory would be if Vince was still running creative? I think Triple H destroyed him by having him cash in on a secondary title and losing. I mean, it's impossible to say. Vince was obviously more of a fan of his than Triple H is. I think he'd be in a better position than he's in now. I mean, it's hard for me to say he'd be a world champion or anything, but I think, you know, with two world titles, I think by now he probably would have been a world heavyweight champion. I think that's safe to say. You know, if Vince took it upon himself to work with him on camera, that tells you that he saw something in him. Like, he wouldn't just do that with anybody. He took him under his wing like an apprentice. Dan Richards, John Cena wins his final match, so Dominic can be the guy to ride the story as the last guy to beat John Cena. I think it helps Dominic more than Gunther. You know what? I don't disagree with you on that. I could definitely see Dom gloating about that, and that could be part of his gimmick going forward. I was the last man to beat John Cena. Duff's Vids, what is a dyslexic zombie's favorite food? Brian's. Brian's. That's an old one, but I still love it. Ryan Hood, these PLEs are becoming very skippable. Are you saying they're becoming like SmackDown? Francisco, thank you for the $2. The Shaunathon, another PLE where I thank Solomonster for the VPN because I'd be pissed off for paying for this crap. Third ESPN and all the endings have sucked, in my opinion. Yeah, I'm still waiting on that big blowaway ESPN show. We haven't gotten it yet. Michael, thank you for the $1.99. Holiday with a $5. Australian $5. I'd rather them do an Armageddon Hell in a Cell match at Survivor Series next year with 6 men or women over War Games. Put a world title on the line. Well, I mean, again, there would have to be a reason for doing it. But again, they have this War Games stuff planned out months in advance, so they're kind of committed to it. Solo's favorite sicko. I was at the show live, and I don't follow WWE much, but I had a blast. I couldn't get over how skinny Brock's legs are, though. Well, look at that. Even the sickos could have fun every now and then at a WWE event. See? Just got to keep an open mind. Now we got to get a WWE fan to go to an AEW show. I think the big revelation there will be when they go to pay for their ticket and they realize how much cheaper it is. Be like, holy shit. I didn't know I can get a ticket for this cheap. This is great. This is awesome. Brian Keith. They call these premium live events when there's nothing premium about them. That's a good point. That's a good point. They don't really feel all that premium, do they? Michael, Rhea wearing Terrifier gear, Jericho inbound. Yeah, I'll have an update on Jericho on the podcast tomorrow. C's, did you think EO was over with the crowd tonight? EO is always over with the crowd. Did you hear otherwise? Because she sounded over to me. Io is consistently over with the crowd, like Rhea is. But Rhea gets bigger reactions, but she's consistently over, no matter where they go. Io is also consistently over wherever they go. Boris, my older boys actually wanted Dom to win and were really happy the whole Judgment Day with Liv coming back beat Cena. That shoulder fake out. Wow. Well, they got what they wanted. It was the right call to put the belt back on Dom. Christian, what three wrestlers from current WWE or AEW would do best in Lucha Underground that have not been in Lucha Underground before? I think Dom would actually be a very entertaining character on that show. Dom, actually, the king of the Luchas. I mean, he would fit in perfectly in Lucha Underground. I'll go Dominic Mysterio for sure. Actually, Dom and Liv, both. So there's two right there. Three wrestlers from current AEW or WWE. I don't know. There's a bunch of people that would have worked on that show. Brody King. Could have been a big monster, like a big monster heel on that show. Bandito. You see those cinematic type skits they did with him when he came back? Like the Old West style vignettes. You could do stuff like that. Cinematic type stuff with Bandito in Lucha Underground. Boris says, personally, I totally fell for Dom's shoulder injury fake, especially since you've been talking about how many superstars have been shelved by one. Yeah, I mean, I bought into it initially just because the landing looked more devastating than even the Penta landing on Monday, and he was legitimately hurt. So I'm like, oh man, like what a disaster. So he did a good job as far as like taking that landing that way and not getting hurt. The Sheriff of Patties, people coming out Rumble style for War Games just sucked. For story and for visuals, Survivor Series looks near the end of its stint in pay-per-view hospice. Well, look, Vince got rid of Survivor Series for a few months there in 2010. And then by the end of the year, it was back. So it never really left. But he made the decision to get rid of Survivor Series, and that was 15 years ago. If there's any legacy PLE that's going to go away, it would be Survivor Series. Boots. With one of his many 50 bombs tonight. Boots to asses tonight. All night long. I love to see it. Venom Kitetsu. Favorite montage. Lonely Road of Faith or My Sacrifice. Oh, man. Those are two. Both of them are really, really good. Oh, man. That Lonely Road of Faith one was so well done, though. I lean towards that one because it had the classic footage in it, too. That was the one where, this was an early 02, right? When Vince and Flair owned a piece of the company and, oh, they had just brought the NWO in, I think, where they were teasing that they were bringing the NWO in. So they did this montage where it started with highlights from the early years of the company, you know, right on up through the time that the NWO invaded WCW, then to the current stars. But I guess My Sacrifice would be more iconic. I'll go My Sacrifice. Sports Productions with the $5. Thank you, Sports Productions. Jeremy Rose with a 13. Macho Man Super Chat. Overpriced tickets, overpriced PLE app for underwhelming events. No creativity. We can continue to complain, but Triple Safe and greedy-ass Nick Khan ain't improving until fans stop watching and going. No, there's no indication of that happening anytime soon. Ace of Masta. This pay-per-view was worse than San Diego FC losing tonight. Alex with a 10. So Brothers Solo, they need to take risks and take chances. Heck, they continue teasing a darker version of Cody, so why not turn him heel? There's a sense of stillness and blandness in the storyline. Yeah, it just feels like nothing ever really changes. Nothing ever really changes. You know, constant teases for stuff that just never happens. You know, whether it's Cody and Randy, I mean, you can come up with any number of examples, you know, Balor and Dom. I mean, they've seemingly had this underlying tension for like fucking 2 years now, you know. Francisco says Frank Furious Flores Triple F. how long before CM Punk loses his title? I would have it off of him by the Rumble if it were up to me. Aaron says, what is your top PLE of the year? I would go Evolution. Well, I'll probably go through all that stuff once I get a little closer to the end of the year. Evolution is, if it's not at the top of the list for me, at least in terms of WWE, like, dude, it's right there. Evolution was great. Kurger, Cody elbowing Punk when he could literally see Braun and Drew right in front of him was the most forced way of manufacturing tension. Peak dumb babyface syndrome. Well, I mean, even Charlotte saving Rhea right before the missed spot in the women's match. It's kind of the way they pulled that off. That also felt a little forced the way it came off. Power spying games. What's going on, man? Seems like I had the right idea, he says, to skip this pay-per-view. GMB says, ban Road Dogg. Also, ban the whole Anoa'i family, except Jacob and Naomi. And the Wyatt Six for a year. Product would improve a good bit. The Wyatt Six, is, I feel like they've been off television for most of the year. You want to take them off completely? I noticed he didn't say the MFTs. You know, the MFTs aren't just Anoa'i. I mean, the MFTs are made up mostly of Tongans at this point. There's three Tongans in that faction. You didn't mention them. You saying you want Tonga Loa to lead the MFTs? Devin from New Jersey. What do you think Brock's motivations were, putting his hat on Bron Breakker on Raw? Was he trying to bury him, give him the rub, or share a laugh? Dude, it was nothing more than him trying to play off a very embarrassing botch. There was no thought put into it whatsoever, because it wasn't planned. He wasn't trying to bury him, he wasn't trying to embarrass him, he was trying to yuck it up. And Bron just stayed in character. He was serious. He was intense. That's all it was. Boots, again, another 50. I believe that might have been number two. Oh, look at this. Canterbury Bankstown Bulldog for life. What a name. Welcome to the channel, brother. Solo's favorite sicko. Sign my petition to make Canadian Destroyer the name of the move, regardless of who does it. Like German suplex, Irish whip, Samoan drop. What other moves have a specific name like that? Canadian Destroyer, German suplex, Irish whip. Have to be other moves with a location-specific name. Holiday 197, I'd like to see Punk turn heel and interfere, costing Cody the WWE title. This leads to a match at WrestleMania, preferably with Cody costing Punk the World Heavyweight Championship beforehand. This intrigues me more than Cody versus Orton. I'm convinced that's not even happening at this point. Cody and Punk, I mean, just promo-wise, I think that would be a banger of a feud there. Boston Crab, yes. Mongolian Chop. Russian Leg Sweep. West Coast Pop. Spanish Flat. Well, Spanish Flat's a little bit different. The Manhattan Drop. Texas Clover. Of course, there's a whole bunch. How come I didn't think of these? Bobby Means. So my question is this. It looks more and more likely that we could get Cody and Punk for WrestleMania. If that's the case, what do you do with Orton? I guess you give him the night off. He's already had the last few months off. I don't know what you do with Randy Orton. I stopped trying to figure out what they're doing with Orton months ago. I don't know. All I know is that Orton, and maybe he still is. I mean, he was being advertised for the December 5th SmackDown, which is next week. Alex, will you be going into more detail on the podcast about the Meltzer report, about The Jericho thing, I'm going to mention it. I think I'll just mention it right at the top. There's really no detail to go into, but I have a quick thought or two. It'll be a very quick item because it was a very brief thing that was mentioned. But I'll mention that at the beginning probably of the show tomorrow. Speedy says, Jake Roberts' attire at Survivor Series 92 is the greatest wrestling attire of all time. That was 91, by the way. He was already out of the company by now. I think actually by the time Survivor Series 92 rolled around, he was probably in WCW already. Doing the coal miner's glove match with Sting. Yeah, no, in 91, he showed up in this wild sweater. And he had leather pants. Yes, he had cowboy boots. It was quite the look. Quite the look. And why? Because he and Macho Man, they did not wrestle on that show. They cut promos to promote their match this Tuesday in Texas. So they didn't even wrestle on that show. 89 Tech says, just want to thank you for doing the pod. Says, did HBK's attitude really change when he got back in late 02? Was he still being a prick? Well, I wasn't working there at the time. Most people said he was a changed man if they knew him from his previous stint. There would be a story every now and then, though, about him being a prick. Hurricane Helms, who works there now, shared one of those stories. I think he witnessed, this would have been in 03, he witnessed Sean really tearing Chris Jericho a new asshole in catering one day. So that was one story. There were like a couple of other ones. I think the old Shawn Michaels is still buried in there. And he would show up every now and then. But yeah, by and large, it sounds like he was much calmer. Very different than the way people remember him being from his first run there. Boots with another 50. Z-Ray, who do you think will become the next face of the company, if not Dom? I've said this before. I think that they are looking at five guys. I think Dom is in that mix. I think Jacob Fatu is in that mix. I think Javon Evans should be, and that's longer term, but in terms of guys that are going to be big for them and could potentially, they could build around like a nucleus of guys in the next like 5 to 10 years. Dom, Jacob, Javon, Oba, and Braun. Those are your five. Which one will end up being the quote-unquote face of the company? I don't see any reason that Oba can't be that guy. I really don't. Oba, to me, he's the total package. He's got the size. He's got the look. He can work. He can talk. He looks the part, man. Kenny Brown, no message, just showing some love with a 1999. Kenny, thank you. And then Boots with another 50. Will you be going live after AAA Guerra de Titanes on December 20th? Probably not. I know I have a House of Glory show the night before. I mean, I don't even know what the full card is going to be. I'll probably just talk about it, if anything, on the podcast the next day. You know, that time of year is very slow, so I'll probably need the content for the Sunday show, honestly. But we'll see. We'll see. I don't even know the full card right now. Toya Ain't Nice says, will we get Becky versus Jessica Carr? I've been saying that. They seem to be prepping for a match between her and Jessica Carr. It could be a TV match, you know, because Jessica's a wrestler, you know. She can work. You could do one match on TV, right? And people will be shocked at how good the referee is, right? Because most people have no idea that she was a wrestler and trained to be a wrestler. She wrestled under a mask at the Evolve tapings a few months ago. Forgot what name she went by. It's got to be building to something. Duff's Vids with a $50 Gunthar bomb just to prove that Boots is not the only one. Had issues with my ExpressVPN until I went to a UK location. Netflix is picky with VPN locations. UK seems best. Yes, I have noticed that Netflix in particular of late is being a little more picky, but you'll always be able to find a location from my experience that works. You know, there was like a UK server that I was using typically, and there was once where I think Netflix was being a little finicky. So I switched to like, I don't know if it was Ireland or I think it was Canada. I think it was a Canadian server. And had no issues. Boots with a 50. It's always good to see Topanga. It was good back when I was younger watching Boy Meets World, and it's still good to see Topanga. She doesn't look all that different. It's been many years, and she still looks the same. William with a 50. William L. I remember reading RSPW on a newsgroup feed in the early 2000s using Earthlink dial-up. It sounds like I missed nothing remarkable from the PLE, but that's why we have the Vault and the WCW channel. Dude, I have been loving the Vault. They've gotten some Survivor Series content up over the last week or two. They I don't know if it's over now, but the last week or so, they've had this Survivor Series watch party, like a live feed. It keeps looping. But they have a lot of like early Survivor Series stuff on there. So I've had that on, you know, like in the background. It's great. I love it. Survivor Series just felt like so much of a bigger deal back then. I wish we could recapture that magic with that show again. I really do. TLA Mark Bannon, thank you for the super chat. Speedy says, I shudder at the thought that WWE keeps Lesnar around to be their version of Minoru Suzuki into his 50s. I don't know that Lesnar is going to be working at that point. Mike, I'm missing the whole popularity of Dom. Marginal wrestler, in my opinion, but WWE doesn't care about wrestling. They care about entertainment. Sad. I mean, it's in the name of the company. It's World Wrestling Entertainment. But, dude, they've been about entertainment for years and years. This is nothing new. It's not just about who's the best bell-to-bell wrestler. It never has been about that with WWE. You know how many great bell-to-bell wrestlers have worked for this company and have never been pushed in a top spot or in the top spot? Because it was never about that. It's about attractions. It's about characters and personalities and charisma and who can sell tickets and appeal to the audience. And that's all very important. I'm not even saying they're wrong in that, but they've always placed a greater emphasis on that than other companies have. Should not be a surprise. Mike says they had a chance to make Liv the biggest babyface in the company and turn on Dom. But nope, let's just put her back with Dom. What a joke. Yeah, but dude, you have to. You can't, like, what would be the reason for her turning on Dom? What has Dom done in storyline, right, recently, that would result in Liv drastically changing her opinion of him and then turning on him? He hasn't done anything. You know, the way they've carried out this Judgment Day stuff, you have to at least play that to a logical conclusion story-wise, where she gets back in the Judgment Day, and maybe it doesn't take very long. Maybe it's only a few months, and then they break up, or there's some sort of split. But, like, you got to factor Balor in there, right? Because Balor and Liv have had issues. Liv and Roxanne, what about that? Like, you're leaving so much story potential on the table. We've made it this far, dude. You can't just carry this out for 2.5 years and then just have her go babyface. There's got to be a reason for it. You can't do that. Power Spying Game, seems like I had the right idea to skip this pay-per-view. Well, I got you covered. All you had to do is tune into the review. The Juliet, 61-year-old Jushin Thunder Liger, wrestled Joey Janela at WrestleCade convention tonight. I did see that. Liger was retired. He came out of retirement for a match tonight that he won in 2 minutes, I believe, against Joey Janela. So good for Joey. He got Liger out of retirement. The smoking section. I've always thought Chris Jericho and Stephanie McMahon's rivalry was very entertaining but underrated. Great chemistry. Any thoughts on that brief feud? I don't think it was all that brief. I feel like they were kind of beefing off and on for a few years there. He would always call her a trash bag hoe and come up with different insults for her. They did that one terrible segment to promote the Planet of the Apes movie. Remember that? With the cake? Or the pies, whatever it was. Yeah, I mean, it was entertaining. The Admiral, David Robinson. The Jets and Giants need to leave MetLife Stadium. Yeah, MetLife Stadium is kind of a dump. I also just laugh at the idea that two New York teams play in New Jersey. I just laugh. Solo's favorite sicko. Do you think Liv should have been saved for the Rumble and as a babyface, possibly even to win the Rumble? Nah, I think what they did tonight is fine. And the big fundamental, Tim Duncan says, this show was terrible. Not a fan of Survivor Series is Tim Duncan. Arabian Knight said he's tired of being just an entrance. Well, sorry, Jay. Objectively, you are 100% just a fucking entrance. Just cringe. If he beats Knight, I'm done. Yeah, he cannot beat LA Knight. We have to make sure that doesn't happen. I don't know if that means, we have to provide some sort of distraction. I don't know if we could sort of lock him away in his dressing room and he gets counted out. I don't know. Jey Uso beating LA Knight and wrestling Gunther in the finals is unacceptable. And I will not tolerate that. Devin says, buy or sell the MFTs or the Wyatt 6. Why are you doing this to me? I will spend my money elsewhere. That's my answer. Mike says, so Dom can beat Cena at Survivor Series for his second IC title reign, but LA Knight can't even get on the show. Got it, Triple H. Yeah, you know, the booking of LA Knight is, it's something else. There's definitely something going on there. Tim Duncan, the big fundamental. What's the nicest MLB ballpark in your opinion? You know, Petco's pretty nice from what I've heard. I haven't been there. I haven't been to all the ballparks. I mean, I've heard nice things about some of them, but I just haven't been to enough of them to really say for sure. I still haven't been to Wrigley Field, which is like a landmark. You know, I've been to Chicago a bunch of times this year, and I'd never had the chance to actually go to, I thought in April I might have, but I just didn't have the time. So there's a lot of ballparks I still would like to be, to be at. Wrigley is one. I feel like there's another one on the West Coast that I've heard is really nice. I don't know if it's the Diamondbacks Park, but which is the one that has a swimming pool in the outfield? Which one is that? I'm trying to think if that was the one maybe in Tampa. I don't remember. Go to Wrigley. Day games are different there. Yeah, I would love to. I just haven't had the chance. And Power Spying Game, Survivor Series 20 years ago had SmackDown versus Raw. I miss it. Yeah, well, until they ran that into the ground, and then I didn't want to see that anymore either. You can make almost anything work without completely running it into the ground, as long as you have a reason for doing it. There's got to be a reason for doing it. There's got to be a good story behind it. And you can make almost anything work, almost any format work, if you have the right players and the right story to go with it. When you're doing things just for the sake of doing it, that's where it goes off the rails. I've got bragging rights. Yeah, don't get me started. Mike says, I'm hoping they set up Gunther against Brock at Mania this year, maybe after Cena's last match. That was the match they were going to do a couple of years ago before they took Brock off the road. And Gunther years ago said that that would be his dream opponent. I'm sure his mind hasn't probably changed much since then. So the only question is, how is that going to end for Gunther? Because if you do that match and Gunther just gets suplexed a bunch of times and then pinned, I don't really see what good that does Gunther when you've taken all this time to really build him up. You know, he's been largely, especially compared to other people, protected by Triple H. So why build him up in that way just to put him in there and make him Brock's next victim? Like, that doesn't appeal to me. He has to win. If you do that match, Gunther has to win. I still have a sour taste in my mouth after what they did with Brock and Cena at WrestlePalooza. What a fucking waste of time that was. Talk about that leading to nothing. The hell was the point of that? Anyway, you guys hit the bonus goal. That will be a future and not too distant future. I'll start getting to work on that this week. Installment of RSPW Rewind, which if you're not familiar with what that is, there's a whole playlist of them here on the channel. I did them, many of them, over the years. And I will be doing another one very soon here on the channel. But in addition to that, because you did hit the goal, I am going to give you not just one, but two. Be the bookers tonight. I think you guys earned it. You guys killed it. So let's do it. It's time to be the booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the booker.
You guys killed it on the likes. You guys killed it on the super chats. Boots and everybody else. All right, so we're not going to do stipulations for the first one. We'll do that for the second one. This is a fun little thing that we do here. I know we got some new subscribers here. A fun little thing that we do here at the end of some of these streams. Completely random. We book a tag team match, a women's match, a main event men's match, sometimes more. And we see what can we come up with. You've heard rumors of ChatGPT, you know, being used in the booking room, which is not true, but one day it might be. This is like if AI booked cards. What would we come up with here? All right, well, we got the Rock and Sock connection. The Rock and Mankind. Talk about entertaining television. There you go, right there. These two knew how to put together entertaining TV segments. It's funny, those two had a literal blood feud and were like a serious feud and killing each other. And they went from that to being like total comedy on TV. But it was always entertaining. Wow, how about this match? How about this match? Rock and Mankind against Edge and Christian. I'm almost sure that was an actual match that we got on TV. It had to be, right? It had to be. I'm sure that must have happened at some point. That's a match right out of the year 2000 right there. Well, 99. Yeah, because Foley retired early in 2000. The first time. So if that match happened, it would have had to have been a TV match in the, fall of 99 maybe? It would have been a very short period of time where they could have done that match. Okay. Women's Be the Booker. Look at this. Fatal four-way. Fatal four-way. Here we go. We got to pick four names. We got Tiffany Stratton, who was not in War Games. Actually, surprisingly, was not in War Games. She's not doing much of anything right now. After going undefeated for most of the year, Tiffany Stratton, We have Li Ying Lee, the former Xia Li, who now, I believe, is the TNA Knockouts champion. Just won the title. So we have Tiffany Stratton. We have Xia Li. We have Emma. I'm not really feeling this match so far. And we have Ronda Rousey. Oh my God. That sounds like a terrible match. Ronda Rousey, Tiffany Stratton, Xia Li, and Emma. I'm not paying to see that. Sorry, I'm not paying to see that. All right, our first main event of two. See how we do. Adam Cole suspended for excessive spray tanner. Spin again. He looks orange in this image. Yes, we went through a period of time on AEW television where Adam Cole went a little cuckoo on the spray tan. And he has apparently been suspended for excessive spray tanner. Spin again. So let's spin again. You know what? The sad thing is I would take Adam Cole looking orange with all the spray tan in the world right now if he was healthy enough to get back in the ring. And unfortunately, he is not. We have... Oh, it's the Beast. It's the Beast. Not that Beast. It's the Beast Mortos. It's Mr. Monet. Is it Mrs. Monet? Mr. Mercedes over here. The Beast Mortos. How about that? The Beast Mortos against John Moxley. We just booked a Dynamite main event. A Collision main event. We booked a Collision main event. We could do better. I know we could do better. All right, now in this round, we're going to add stipulations. One each. One stipulation to each match. First Blood. We have a First Blood tag team match. All right, so here we go. First Blood. This is definitely airing on Dynamite. This sounds like a Dynamite match right here. First Blood with the New Day. We're doing Freebird rules, so whichever one, whichever two of the three you want to pick, what am I doing? Feel free to go there. All right, First Blood, the New Day against the Hart Foundation. I'd buy that. The Hitman and the Anvil. Against Kofi Kingston and Big E. Or Kofi Kingston and Xavier Woods. Either one. Either one works. I like it. All right, the women's match is going to be a dog collar match. I don't know that there's ever been a women's dog collar match before. There has been. I've never seen one. I don't know that a women's dog collar match would be acceptable. Just the visual of it in today's society. But let's see here. We have, oh my God. This is definitely not acceptable. Nikki Bella. We just got done talking about Nikki Bella. And what a wonderful match she had tonight with Stephanie Vaquere. Nikki Bella is going to be in a dog collar match. Stephanie is in here. Nikki Bella and Jamie Hayter in a dog collar match. Now, we need to get Jamie Hayter in the ring for the Women's World Championship with Chris Statlander. That's what we need to be building to for Revolution or for Double or Nothing next year. I don't need to see her against Nikki Bella. That's not the match I want to see her in. All right, last one. Main event time. We have... Oh, my God. No, we're not doing this. I'm making an executive decision. We land on dog collar match again. We're not doing a double dog collar match. We're doing a loser leaves town match. That's it. Whoever loses is gone. Gone from the territory. I'll have to remove them from Be the Booker. All right, who's going home? Let's find out. Here we go. Be the Booker is over after the Wyatts. Oh no, the Wyatt Six has massacred the roster. The Wyatt Six. They have massacred the entire roster. Be the Booker is over. We were so close to having a loser leaves town main event. See, now everybody is going to turn heel on the Wyatt Six. They just ruined Be the Booker. Oh, man. You know, that happens sometimes. Yes, even Chad. They massacred everybody. We never... Boomerang says this Be the Booker was as bad as Survivor Series. I failed you. I tried to book a better card than Survivor Series. I failed you. Mike says Blood and Guts was way better than War Games. Not even close. Well, you certainly got a lot more blood in Blood and Guts. That's for sure. Super Pony. Why is nobody talking about Jay doing his entrance in the cage? What do you mean nobody? Do I look like a nobody to you? I spent 5 minutes talking about this. He said, what the fuck was that? If he beats LA Knight, people are going to lose it, and rightfully so. Now watch, they'll go do it just to piss people off. Yeah, I mean, no, just in terms of a final in the tournament, I mean, they would have to be absolutely brain dead to do Gunther and Jey Uso again. At least Gunther and LA Knight is a fresh match. And even that one, I'm not terribly excited for. But no, you cannot do Jey Uso and Gunther again. That is, Triple H should have his booking card revoked if he does Gunther against Jey Uso. I have seen it enough times this year. They've already bungled this tournament anyway. But I have no interest in seeing that. I have less than zero interest in seeing that match. Oh, man. Solo, for how much you talk about Triple H, you're not that much of a better booker either. Oh, based on tonight. Yeah, I know. Based on what I just booked, forget about it. I just booked myself right out of a territory with that card. Anyway, that's all I got. You guys killed it tonight. Almost 3 hours. Double Be the Booker, RSPW Rewind, brand new. I don't think I've done one in 3 years. Brand new one is on the way. I'll be working on that this week. You guys earned it. That should be fun. I've already rounded up a bunch of links to post. I mean, I have a list. I have a list that I pull from. There's only so many old posts that are still accessible that I haven't already covered, but I've got some for you. So we'll work on that tomorrow at some point in the afternoon. I don't know exactly when, but probably mid-afternoon, mid to late afternoon, episode 940 of The Sound Off will be up with all the Survivor Series fallout. I got some other news as well. Talk Continental Classic. Seth Rollins and Becky Lynch made some headlines this week with an interview that they did. Ric Flair did too, for all the wrong reasons. So we'll get to all that. Hit that like button on your way out if you have not already done so. Help get us in the algorithm so more people will find the review. Be well. Stay safe. I hope you all had a very happy Thanksgiving. And I will see you for the Sound Off tomorrow and live for the Raw post-show back here on YouTube on Monday night. So until then, take care, guys.